You're listening to the Flicks of Doom podcast, the official movie podcast of geeksofdoom.com. I want Eve to do the intro.
No, I don't like that.
Welcome to Flicks of Doom, episode number 3. Today we're going to be joined by our normal hosts, Justin Vactor.
Yeah.
The indomitable Eve of Doom. Eve.
When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
And our special guest, very special indeed. In fact, he came in on the short bus today. His name is Hunter Camp.
That's just insensitive.
It is. That's my goal. We're going to be covering some news, as always. Some box office stuff. Maybe a movie or two. I think we got some mini dooms and our big review of Inception. So why don't we just go ahead and jump right into it with the news? All right. So let's kick off the news. The first story. Kevin Bacon confirmed as X-Men first class villain Mystique Chosen. Has anybody here read First Class? I know I haven't.
It's my impression that First Class, the comics, have nothing to do with the movie whatsoever.
I mean, that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, that's my interpretation overall.
Yeah, I haven't read First Class either.
I think the whole premise of First Class was supposed to just be basically like exactly what it sounds like. It's the first class. It was like the original X-Men, kind of like before they became big.
Yeah, and that's playing off of that whole Origins thing that they're on. You know, X-Men Origins Wolverine, and they were talking about that X-Men Origins Magneto, and it was going back to the beginning, a prequel, if you will.
Yeah,
but then like some of the people that they mentioned for the cast, I don't think were in the comics at all. Like in the first class.
Oh,
comics.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm not sure how it's going to work or anything like that. I'm just hoping whatever they do, they hurry up and finish this stuff soon so that Marvel can have their properties back. Because I want to see Beast in the Avengers. That'd be awesome.
I think this is going to be a train wreck, though.
Probably.
This movie, I don't think this is going to end up well.
Are you serious? Have you seen the genius behind Wolverine Origins? I mean, come on.
No, that has nothing to do with this. Matthew Vaughn is directing this, who did Stardust and Kick A-double-S. So,
point taken. And by point taken, I mean it's probably still going to be crap.
No.
They got some good actors in this movie. Yeah. They got James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
So...
And I liked Alice Eve earlier this year in She's Out of My League. So good. I have confidence in this a lot more than I did in Wolverine, that's for sure.
I believe everybody thought Wolverine was going to be okay until they actually started seeing footage.
Well, yeah.
I didn't think so.
No,
there was a lot of people that were talking about the trailer was bad. I remember that specifically.
Yeah. I think everybody was pumped about it that I knew about. But I guess that's just me. I don't know. I don't see it being good. I think studio interference is going to get in the way. I think Matthew Vaughn has a lot of work to do as a director to learn some things. Because I personally didn't think Kick-Ass was the perfect movie. So,
uh-oh.
I think it had some major flaws. And I know everyone in the world disagrees with me, but I think so.
Well, there was a jetpack in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on. He's probably going to do that in X-Men. There's probably just going to be jetpacks all over.
Spoilers.
Yes. I think that Mystique is going to be a jetpack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the news is that Kevin Bacon is in the movie, and he's going to be a villain, but we don't know.
But Kevin Bacon actually is a jetpack, so that makes sense.
Yeah. I think he's going to play Mystique as a jetpack. Yeah. That's my theory.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
But, does anybody have any other thoughts about Kevin Bacon, or should we just move on?
I'm not a big Kevin Bacon fan overall. He's been in like every movie I ever made, but still.
Yeah, you remember he was the one that they did the 6 degrees of
Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It was he the one in I can't remember what that movie was called.
Footloose?
Animal House.
It was a horror movie, but I don't remember. He's probably been in everything.
Hollow Man.
Hollow Man. Was he in Flatliners?
I think he was. I think he's been in a lot of stuff.
He's been in 69 movies, according to IMDb.
Well, if the movie sucks, it won't be Kevin Bacon's fault. So
that's true.
Right.
But I think that's just another, on top of the other actors that they have, they're assembling a pretty good cast here.
Yeah, that scares me, though. That honestly does scare me. Because a lot of times when you see a huge, like, strong cast, that's what it's relying on. So, I mean, not all the time, but a lot of times. So now that we've talked Kevin 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon to death, let's go ahead and move on to the next story, which is there was a picture released on of the cover of the upcoming Entertainment Weekly, I think.
Yeah.
Before we go into that, wouldn't it be great if your segue was we went from Kevin Bacon to John Hamm?
Thank you.
Continue.
Well, Bacon and Ham.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds.
I prefer turkey bacon.
Hunter's favorite
on Entertainment Weekly with his Green Lantern costume. What do you guys think? I'm not sure what to think, but
I think this image is probably heavily photoshopped for the cover of Entertainment Weekly, so I'm not sure that it's a true representation of what Ryan Reynolds is going to look like.
I honestly think that, and I don't know if you guys agree, I'm pretty sure you probably will, that making comments on screenshots and screen captures and just pictures is kind of ridiculous until you actually see the footage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I agree, but if that's the design that they go off of, like regardless of how it actually looked on him, I don't know, man. I don't like the. It looks like more like a symbiote, which makes sense considering that it's an alien ring. But I mean, I don't know if the black and green is just and white is such a like you know an iconic costume that I would think that they would at least try to incorporate that some way. But they didn't.
Well, don't forget that the costume is going to be digitally added to him.
Yeah.
Like, he's wearing one of those...
So, if it doesn't test well,
they
click their mouse and it changes.
I'm just hoping that overall it doesn't test well.
So. You can't go by Entertainment Weekly. That's number one. Because every one of their covers is just, like, heavily photoshopped nonsense. So... it's probably not even worth talking about at this point.
Well, what do you guys think about Entertainment Weekly having the exclusive instead of announcing it at Comic-Con?
It doesn't really matter because they'll show something else at Comic-Con.
They'll probably
get footage at Comic-Con.
I mean, it's not like we're crazy and think that it ruins Comic-Con or something.
It was their Comic-Con preview issue, that's why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just saying for you guys who are going to Comic-Con, does this spoil it for you? Like, would you have rather had the reveal at Comic-Con rather than seeing it on Entertainment Weekly?
No, because there's so much to do at Comic-Con that, I mean, those people have a reveal. They'll still have a reveal in the Green Lantern panel anyways. Mm-hmm. But also, there's so many other reveals that will happen at the same time as that as Green Lantern footage is being revealed, you know, or I'm not confirming that or not, you know, but I'm just saying like that's if they're doing that, you know, if they're showing some footage or whatever the case may be, whatever they show, there'll be so many other things going on that like it doesn't matter. You're going to have like hundreds of things getting that's always what happens. It's the same thing as like E3 and New York Comic Con. Everything is like every bit of little tiny news that they can let out during Comic Con is let out. That, you know, it's just it's crazy how much stuff gets let out there. Mm-hmm. So one small thing is not a huge deal if it's not let out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering the fact that like we said before, Entertainment Weekly, not the number one coverage for the movie. And if they want to, guess what? They can double click and change the freaking costume in a second. So that might not even be the costume. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. That's just my opinion. Anybody else have some final thoughts on Green Lantern costume reveal?
Bull.
bologna. So we have bologna, ham, and bacon.
Yeah.
Yes.
and we also had another reveal. It's of some very Power Rangers-esque costumes from the Thor movie. Thor, Odin, and Loki.
This story got a lot of retweets.
Everybody wanted to see the pictures, and I think it's about the same reaction as it was for the Green Lantern costume, actually. A lot of people think they just don't look very good.
Yeah, I think they're worse than the Green Lantern one. The only one that I think looks good to me is the Thor costume.
It's so plastic looking. Mm-hmm. It's like...
His hammer looks completely like plastic.
I really think... That's what I said during the Iron Man movie, and I got reamed for it, and now people are actually seeing what I meant. But that's just me, though.
But, you know, you're right. It does reek of, like, a Power Rangers type of movie. Just the way the photo is, something about it, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it has the seriousness of an Iron Man or an Incredible Hulk.
Which is the worst thing for me, because honestly I'm one of the biggest Thor fans in the world, and this is like the movie I've been looking forward to for a long time, and I see it being another Hulk, which is sad because I love the Hulk too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we can't judge the whole movie based on one photo, so I think we're going to need to see a lot more. And this, they're going to have a Thor panel at Comic-Con, so I'm sure we'll see footage.
I think what really it seems to be the pattern, America buys the more realistic heroes more than they do the mythological and kind of unrealistic characters. Like the Hulk, even Superman movies don't do as well nowadays as the more realistic, like Iron Man and Batman and Spider-Man all seem more realistic. They're all real people. But it seems to me like the gods and Supermen, quote-unquote, don't do as well. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
For me, the worst part, like, I'm not really that bothered by the picture that we see. It doesn't give away anything, so it's hard to really to judge it. It doesn't like I don't think it looks terrible, but the worst thing about it is the eye patch on Odin.
Yeah,
like that just looks completely bizarre and out of place.
Yeah, and you know, it's the same thing as I guess Green Lantern is kind of, they could in post make it look better. Mm-hmm. Like it might look plasticky now, but that's just a photograph. Maybe the way it works, it you know, they use digital effects or something to make it look more metallic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I thought in the beginning a lot of the Iron Man photos weren't that great looking. I mean, the suit looked good, but I thought the images themselves really didn't look that great. I don't think it was a true representation of what we saw in the film.
Yeah. Well,
going along with that eye patch, Anthony Hopkins, for me, his the latter part of his career here, he's done some roles that seemed way over the top for me, and that seems like this fits right in. Like, he's going to be overacting, and now I place thee on thy Chesapeake. That is like just reenacting Hunter Camp's home life is something that I don't think is a very good thing for Thor. I just don't think it is.
What?
And now I lay my head down on thine pillow to rest mine weary soul.
Ooh. Why do you say that like it's a bad
Hunter Camp?
Justin Vector as the next Odin.
Every night before bed, Hunter Camp lays down and he puts his sheet over his body. I now lay me down to sleep. Thine Hunter Camp will surely weep.
Now, I'm still not sure why you're saying that like it's a bad thing. I'm like,
well,
that's absolutely normal for everyone.
All right.
That's what everyone does when they go to sleep, apparently.
Seriously, what are you talking about?
Okay, so the last bit of news, Will Smith is going to be playing a vampire in the retelling of the Bible's Cain and Abel story. Was there a vampire in the Cain and Abel story?
Well, a funny thing is, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Bram Stoker actually wrote the Bible. So, yes, there were vampires included in the Cain and Abel story.
He's the original author.
Yes, how did I not know that?
Stephanie Meyer.
I don't know. No, there's no werewolves.
Yeah.
Justin, you like,
I think this is a ridiculous idea.
I'm team Cain.
I think it doesn't matter because guess what? Will Smith's in it. Everyone's going to go see it.
True.
Is that still the case anymore?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It sure is. Look at I Am Legend, a very bad
Look
movie.
Look at Karate Kid.
Still a while ago. And Karate Kid actually apparently did well.
How about Hanover?
Yeah, but look at Karate you mean Hancock?
That was still like, what was that, like a year or 2 years ago?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago, I think. Right?
And it didn't, I mean, it didn't,
that
like,
movie, come on, look how ridiculous that movie was, and look how well it did because he was the
it
lead.
It was like two parts, like that movie was like two.
Did it do that well?
Yeah, because the first,
it did like, really well.
He's the only star,
the first
that can
half
sell by his name alone.
Yeah, no, seriously, he really is. I mean, ever since Fresh Prince, that he's been the name.
Well, Independence Day was the best movie ever made. So
yeah, true. And then Men in Black, though. I mean, even Men in Black, like, it's kind of ridiculous that movie had done so well.
Well, Men in Black was entertaining.
If it wasn't him, I guarantee you that movie would not have had a second movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, like
actually,
like
Tommy
you said,
Jones it, helped with it, but
they could sell a movie on his image alone. It doesn't matter what the premise is, what it's about, how well it's made. If he's in the lead, that's it. You're going to get people.
If
in
7 Pounds was an indie movie, do you think it would have got any money?
I didn't see it.
No.
So I don't know.
No. Will Smith's name is what sold that movie.
Right, which is why he co-produces and so does his wife all of the project that he's in, because you'll make your money back and more.
Yep.
So I think, and I'm sure you guys agree, that the whole vampire thing has been overdone, and people are, you know, filmmakers are just scrambling to try to get their vampire tale told, and the fact that now they're going to the Bible to the Cain and Abel story to make Cain a vampire it's just ridiculous.
I'm really interested.
I mean,
how they play.
Cain is Spider-Man's clone. Doesn't anybody know anything?
Seriously,
no.
No, but I'm really interested to see how they play this, like how they spin this movie, like if it's meant to be absolutely ridiculous, which it sounds like it. It could be pretty entertaining, but if it's taken seriously at all, like if it's presented like Twilight or even a horror movie,
it needs to be like, presented like
yeah, it needs
Piranha
to be a
3D.
Comedy.
Yes, it needs to be a Piranha 3D.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So then we have just a tiny bit of box office numbers here. We usually just cover until the new movie, so that this week is actually the top three again. So top three: Inception, $60 million, Despicable Me, 32, almost 33, and number three is The Sorcerer's Apprentice, $17 million. So yeah, it's a pretty decent week for Inception there.
So Despicable Me beat The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which came out the same week, and it came out on a Wednesday.
As soon as I saw The Sorcerer's Apprentice, I pretty much called that it was going to be the next National Treasure. Like, it's a fun movie to watch, but it's like it got critically raped. So I mean, and on top of that, you're also looking at the fact that Sorcerer's Apprentice came out on Wednesday, so it got it knocked down its weekend total because of the 5 day total. So.
Plus, we're actually recording today on Sunday, and we usually record on Mondays, so we don't have.
Yeah, these are
the
predicted
numbers.
These aren't for sure what the number is, but it's the predicted numbers is, I believe, isn't that is that's what we have, right, Justin? The predicted numbers, not the.
Yeah, but I think National Treasure was a lot bigger box office draw than.
Nick Cage has gone down a little bit on his, like, he used to be a big name like Will Smith. Mm-hmm. Not as big as Will Smith, but like pretty much kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where you saw Nick Cage's name on the movie and you would go see it, like, how the hell did Next make any money? Because that was the worst movie ever made. But I mean, he's not like that anymore. I think he's just getting older and he's been in so much, which is sad though, because I don't know if anybody else has seen Sorcerer's Apprentice, but I really like Jay Baruchel, so I was kind of hoping that movie did well.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting. Despicable Me has already been greenlit for a sequel.
Yeah, with the minions, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to have.
Jen, did you call that? Well, that last time?
The minions are going to have like a short that they're going to do, I think, before the movie.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I called it or not, but I mean, they're looking for their next Ice Age.
Right.
They're looking for their next Ice Age, so they're going to have to run it.
They didn't do Ice Age, did they?
Yeah.
Ice Age and Horton Hears a Who?
Yeah, that was Universal, huh?
I didn't realize Ice Age was Universal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's like I said, it was a pretty decent box office weekend. I mean, people went out and saw. I mean, I was surprised. I didn't think Inception was get as much as it did, or as much as it should get. I mean,
well, what I noticed, I don't know about. I know you guys. I think all of you might have seen Inception in advance previews, right? Did anyone see it on opening day?
I saw it twice
day?
Before it came out.
I saw it Saturday.
Okay, so I don't know about your guys' audience, but mine was very mixed. There was people of all ages, and I noticed there was a lot of senior citizens in my showing, which was, I went on Saturday afternoon, like it was a 2:00 showing.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of senior citizens there. So I think it was like finally a movie that they could come out and see because, you know, it's like a thinking movie as opposed to 3D animated or, you know, action superhero kind of thing.
I don't know if you know this, but a lot of older people come to the movies and just look for a title that sounds good.
Really?
Yeah, like what was really weird was like when movies like Zack and Miri came out. They saw Zach and Miri and just, oh, that sounds sweet. And then they came back out like,
I got one
later.
For a similar story. When I went to see
Bruno.
The third American Pie, I think was called American Wedding.
Yeah.
And when I went to it was the same thing. It was like a Saturday at 1:00 showing. And like the whole front, like where the handicap seats are, were elderly people. And I'm not talking just 65 senior citizen, year old senior citizen. I'm talking like they had to be in their 80s, 90s even. And let me tell you, you know, you get to a certain point in that movie and these people were a gift, you know. And I remember like one couple, an elderly couple was sitting next to me and I leaned to my husband and I said, how long before this couple realizes they're totally in the wrong theater, you know? And they were watching it, but then it got to the scene with the grandma, and I think it was Stifler and the grandma, and that was it for them. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. So
They go by its own titles.
Right.
Yeah.
I totally believe. You see American Wedding, and you're like, oh, that must
the
be
the worst one was Bruno. They're like, oh, that sounds like a sweet boy. Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah.
It was bad.
Well, now you know, filmmakers, if you want to get, you know, the 65 and over crowd into your movie, just name it something sweet and endearing.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much. So.
Eve, I had to make a correction there. Yeah, you were right. Ice Age is Fox.
Okay.
Not Universal. It looks like Universal did 9. That was the other movie that they did.
Oh, that's the other one? So it's 9 and Horton Hears a Who?
And I'm sorry, Horton Hears a Who was also Fox. So
okay.
For Universal, it was 9 and then Despicable Me. They haven't really done a lot of feature stuff.
Yeah, they're relatively new, their animated division. That's why.
Yeah. Well, they worked with a different... With 9, they worked with Relativity Media, and then with Despicable Me, they worked with Illumination Entertainment. Like, that's
right.
a different... So, yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I didn't know that. All right, so actually, I originally thought it was Ice Age because of you, Justin.
Yeah, that was my
thanks
fault.
For screwing me over,
yeah.
Justin. I appreciate that. Well, I mean, everyone's looking for their cartoon series, though. So, really, that's what they're doing. So, and you know, I can't blame them. I mean, if you can make, even if it's just a little bit of money on direct-to-DVD movies,
well,
they're going to do it.
Right
know?
Now,
that's
that's what's selling in Hollywood. Like, things that are pretty much a sure bet are family films and then sequels, like, based on established franchises.
I can tell you right now, if it's not in the world, it is in our demographic over here, because, I mean, that's, we always get at least 3 to 4 copies of a film that's a family movie. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and move on to our mini dooms. So our mini dooms. Let's start off with our guests. I heard that you watched another movie with Leonardo DiCaprio in it.
I did. I watched Shutter Island, which was a really good movie. It was more of like, and this is honestly what I thought Inception was sort of going to be, because I didn't go into Inception with any kind of like, I don't think I'd even seen a trailer for Inception. So the premise of Shutter Island is two federal marshals come into an insane asylum to investigate a case where somebody has escaped, and then it basically goes from there. It kind of has a little bit of a thriller type feel to it, but ultimately doesn't end up doing that. It's a really interesting movie, very, very mental, oriented. So I really enjoyed it. Really, like, seeing Leonardo DiCaprio do a role like that really got me interested for Shutter Island even more.
Actually, that brings up a good point. What does everybody think of Leonardo DiCaprio's career? I mean, honestly, to me personally, I didn't really like him at first, like in his really, really early career.
Brunca? But
I think he's grown a lot.
Well, he's one of those few child actors that has had a successful transition to adult actors.
But it wasn't an easy transition, because if you were in Titanic, even though obviously everyone loved the movie and Kate Winslet was up for the Academy Award for Best Actress, and the movie was up for a lot of Academy Awards, he was snubbed. He did not get nominated for Best Actor. And not only that, everyone said that he was the least talented person in the movie and that he couldn't act, and they made him out to be, because if you recall, like, that sparked Leo mania, where all these girls, he was on the cover of every magazine after that. Right, teen magazine. Like, all of a sudden, he had, like, this resurgence.
And I'm sure he hated, the money he got paid for being on those magazines.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, basically, people were saying he couldn't act. And I really think it was when he hooked up with Scorsese that people started to take him seriously. But previous to that, I even though he did things like Basketball Diaries, serious dramas, he did, but he just wasn't getting the respect for it until he hooked up with Scorsese.
Now, would you say that was Gangs of New York that really turned him around in people's eyes, or
that, and he did Aviator.
And I think that's where it really, like, all, like, public eye completely changed. Mm-hmm. I think Gangs of New York wasn't as big of a movie, so
yeah.
I think,
and plus that was a big ensemble cast too. Like, he wasn't the breakout star of Gangs of New York, but
I remember Aviator, seeing him and being like, "Oh wow, he can actually do some."
Right.
Stuff. Well, see, that's
one of the things. Gangs of New York by that point, so
that was one of the things about Gangs of New York for me, was that it was a great ensemble cast, and he was able to hold his own. And so that's kind of what
I'm not saying he didn't come into his own then. I just think America as a whole saw him, more people saw him in Aviator. And then I think really when I I subconsciously noticed it, Aviator around that time, Aviator, but I didn't actually admit it to myself until around Departed, I think it was. He was in that, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was in Departed.
I think Departed is when I was like, holy crap, I like Leonardo DiCaprio. He's good.
Yeah, and I really felt that same way, and that was another situation where he's like up against legends, and does an amazing job.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he's held his own ever since.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a child actor. He was on. You remember he was on Growing Pains.
That was the first time I saw him.
Right, and he was not a bad actor. He was a good child actor. He wasn't one of these annoying kids that you're like, oh, yeah, screw him. I don't want to see him anymore. I'm sick of him. And I think he was good I can't think of a movie he was bad in, if you want to know the truth. Even that, remember that Romeo and Juliet movie?
That movie was awesome.
Oh, yeah, it was,
Guys.
That movie was annoying. Romeo and Juliet. It was some, who was the director on that? It was like, so-and-so's Romeo. Oh, so yeah. No, that wasn't it. Okay. It was something, Romeo and Juliet. And yeah, that movie was kind of annoying, but it wasn't his fault. Like he was fine. He acted well in that movie, and he was fine. So I don't understand. I think he just got backlash for, you know, being good looking, I guess. But now he's, you notice he tries to look more rugged now, right? He's always like scruffy in his movies, and you know he's not like a baby face anymore.
Yeah, I mean he still has some problems growing some facial hair, but
he can't fix that.
Yeah, I think I have the same problem, so I'm not gonna knock him for that.
Don't fault him because of his facial hair.
It made me laugh. I think it wasn't Departed. It was what was the most recent one where he goes overseas?
Blood Diamond.
It's a Blood Diamond? Yeah, I think that one, it looked like he had like pubic hair on his face. I was like,
oh no.
Crap. But, yeah.
He was also in Body of Lies and Revolutionary Road between
the Body of Lies is the one I was thinking of. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the one. That's where he goes to Afghanistan, I think.
Well, I mean, he still isn't getting recognition as far as awards go, right? Like, he hasn't been nominated for anything. Has he?
I think he's had some nominations. I don't think he's won, maybe.
No, he definitely hasn't won. But what was he nominated for? I don't recall him being nominated for anything.
I'm pretty sure he was. Let me check that.
The Quick and the Dead with Sharon Stone.
He was nominated for Best Actor for Aviator.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, I knew he had at least one.
All
right. I think he'll get something coming up here, but we'll talk about Inception in a minute. So let's go ahead and move on to Eve's mini doom, The Losers. So what did you think about The Losers, and what did you think about how it compares to the book?
Well, I thought it was a really good movie. It's a great action movie. It was one of these action films where there was some good humor, you know, dispersed throughout it, and it kind of followed the comic book in a way, but it also deviated a lot from the comic book. The comic is put out by Vertigo, and I think this movie was supposed to be based on the first 6 issues, because I think there's 12. So this was the first 6 issues, and it's about a U.S. military special forces team. They were on a mission in Bolivia. I don't even remember what the mission was, but they were supposed to go in, I don't even remember what they were supposed to do, truthfully. That's how unimportant the mission was. But the end result is that it turned out that there were children involved, and they didn't want to go in and, like, slaughter children. So instead of doing that, they actually saved the children. But the problem is that they were supposed the losers, the military special forces team, they were actually the target, and they were supposed to get killed on the mission. So someone betrayed them, and they were supposed to die. But they ended up living, and then they were presumed dead. So now they're living in Bolivia with no money, food, job prospects, clothes, you know, nothing, basically. They're living as homeless people in Bolivia, and they're trying to figure out how to get back to the United States and how to enact revenge on the person who betrayed them and wanted them killed. So that's what they do. And in the process, they meet this woman, Aisha, and she's another kind of specially
so
trained.
So hot.
Okay, Zoe Saldana plays her. And it's very – here's where it's different from the comic book is that in the film – first, we get the losers. We see their situation. Then she shows up. Don't ask me how she finds them, because they're presumed dead and no one else apparently is looking for them. But she finds them and says, hey, I'm going to help you, you know, find the person who betrayed you. And all I want in return is that you killed this person, like as if they wouldn't do it anyway. So they hook up with her. They know nothing about her. They don't know about her background. They don't know if they can trust her, but of course they do. And so then they go on mission after mission to take out the people who were against them. And I don't want to say who or what or anything like that, but I can say in the movie, you know right away who was out to get them. And it's this one character. And in the comic book, you never meet that character. Like, he's referred to, but you never meet him. It's a mystery. And there's a different way about him. So in this one, I feel like they, again, this is my problem with movie adaptations in general, is that I feel like they give away too much up front. They're giving you way too much information. There's no suspense, and you never learn what the mystery is or what the twist is as the characters learn them. Like, you're learning them up front, and so I feel like that takes away from the suspense. But if you have never read the comic book and you like, you know, fun action movies, and I don't think this one was that over the top. I don't think it was one of these things where, you know, you're rolling your eyes through it going like, oh, that could never happen. It's like, you know, when some badass action sequence happens, you're just like, yeah, you know, you're like, you're really into it. And I just, the characters were all great. Even the actors were all great. I really enjoyed this movie.
Even the boat scene, you don't think was a little bit over the top?
Well, I mean, it's like, it is over the top, but
I mean, but were those balloons that were bouncing around, or were those crates? Because, dang.
I know. Well, it's like, remember in Die Hard 4 when Bruce Willis drives the car into the helicopter?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was pretty cool, right? But didn't you, the whole time you were watching that, going like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is ridiculous. Like,
no, that's John McClane.
Right. But I mean, I felt like when I was watching Die Hard 4, I felt like this is just really over the top. Because it's John McClane, he's like just a cop. Like, he's not like, you know, anybody super special to be able to do that. Whereas these people, the losers, I felt that, you know, they're specially trained. They have like all this experience. Like, they are masters at what they do. Like, I believe that they could pull it off. Like, all of the things they do.
Well, I heard a great analogy for the, or not necessarily analogy, but I heard a great thing about the Die Hard movies that someone had mentioned a while back. And it was basically, if you look at Die Hard 1, it's the only realistic one out of all of them. Because the first one, he's scared. He just wants to save his family. You know, he just wants to protect his family and blah, blah, blah. After that, the second one, he all of a sudden gets this attitude where he's like, I could save the world. And he just, like, you know.
Well, I think that's like the Rambo mentality, because in the first movie, First Blood, he was just a Vietnam vet that came back from the war, and he was psychologically damaged. And, you know, he was prejudiced against, you know, I think, what, because his hair was a little long, that's why they were out to get him. And then he uses his Green Beret training to survive, like, in the area, and, you know, thwart the people out to get him. But then in the second movie, all of a sudden, he's like the action hero, superhero. And then in the third one, it's like him against Afghanistan. He's like him against the whole country.
And then so, Danny Glover fights a predator.
Yeah.
Right. Crap. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I think that's what it was. But you're right. You know, the first Die Hard movie is like just a regular guy who's stuck in a circumstance, and how does he overcome it by miraculous odds? And then the subsequent movies are all, now he's going to the top, like, he's almost a superhero.
It's like more and more ridiculous as you
continue.
So. Right. But so let's go ahead and move on to something that wasn't so ridiculous, really. I mean, it was a little bit, but it was fun. I believe both me and Justin saw The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah.
And basically The Sorcerer's Apprentice is based on, if you guys, I don't know if you guys have all seen it, but the Fantasia movie, they have a little short called The Sorcerer's Apprentice where Mickey Mouse steals the sorcerer's hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Splits the broom in half and da da da.
That's based on a poem from the 1890s.
So.
Really?
Yeah. Mm.
So, I mean, it's the same kind of premise as Pirates of the Caribbean, where it's based on something very small, but they make it into something really big. And I'm pretty sure they're going to try to make it into a franchise if they can make enough money for it. And I'm not sure what the budget was for it, but
$150 million.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen now.
Yeah.
Unless it really does well internationally. I think it's only made over the 5-day total. So, what, 24, I think, is predicted?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't see it happening, but it was... It was interesting, but, I mean, you got Jay Baruchel, you got Nick Cage. I can't remember the girl's name, but she reminds me of Kristen Stewart for some reason.
Hmm. Teresa Palmer, the blonde?
Except for Teresa Palmer actually looks decent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, it's what it sounds like. Jay Baruchel becomes Nick Cage's apprentice in the movie, and hijinks ensue because there's bad guys, and you know, all sorts of crazy stuff happens. And it's not a very good rundown of the movie, but I mean, there's really not much to talk about without spoiling it. So, I mean, to me, if you like National Treasure, like that kind of series, you'll probably enjoy Sorcerer's Apprentice. And if you like Jay Baruchel, you should definitely check it out. That's my overall opinion of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I saw it, I actually told Justin, and he can attest to this. I said, I enjoyed the movie. I had fun with it, but I know it's going to get critically bent over the table.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. It's actually got, I believe Justin's going to bring this up, but I'm going to steal it from him. I think it's got a lower score on Rotten Tomatoes than Percy Jackson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of ridiculous because, to me, Percy Jackson was not even close to Sorcerer's Apprentice, but that's probably because I read the book. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, probably people went to see Percy Jackson based on the book, whereas Sorcerer's Apprentice, I think people maybe didn't know what it was going to be about or...
That's different, though. I mean, if that's the case, if it's because of the book, then the people would score Percy Jackson lower. Because
I think also Nicolas Cage, people are very critical of him now. I know you said previously that, you know, if he it used to be where if he was in a movie, you know, he was the big name and people would go just for him. But I think there's like Nicolas Cage backlash now where perhaps if he hadn't been in this movie,
that man was in Face Off. Respect him.
No, I happen to like Nicolas Cage. I don't dislike him, but I'm talking about public backlash against him. But like, it's almost like it's people are sick of him, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good day and age right now.
Hunter Camp has an affinity towards Nicolas Cage, and I don't know why that
is. It's the opposite of an affinity.
There's just some type of attraction between the two that I can't explain.
I actually walked into Hunter Camp making out with Nick Cage one day. It's very awkward.
That's disgusting.
But moving on, Justin, what did you think about the movie? Would you enjoy seeing another one? Or I mean, what was the best part about it?
Yeah. Not to spoil anything, but they do kind of leave it open for a sequel. So if they wanted to, if they made enough money, they could do a sequel. But I'm good with where it ended, and this being the only one, I'm pretty good on this one. I'm a fan of the first National Treasure. The second one kind of didn't really... I didn't see it necessary for the second one to exist, but that's kind of how I feel with this one. And I would say... there's some enjoyable parts to it, and it's just like with Despicable Me. I think it's a good movie to take your family to, but I would say it's more of a rental. I wouldn't say go out and see it in the theater, especially with Inception out this week. This isn't one that I would recommend people seeing over Inception. I like Nicolas Cage, unlike Hunter Camp, and I like Jay Baruchel. So, and Alfred Molina is one of my favorite actors. So, those three.
He was the villain, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was in, for anybody who doesn't know, he was Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
And he was in Indiana Jones, and he was in a whole lot of other movies. But actually, we saw him earlier this year in Prince of Persia. So, he's kind of in this kind of family mode right now. But
his character in that movie was really funny.
Yeah. I love Alfred Molina. He's one of my favorites. But this movie itself, a lot of the humor for me fell flat. I did like the reference to The Sorcerer's Apprentice, the actual animated feature.
I was waiting for that, and when I saw it, I was laughing really hard.
Yeah, I really like that, and there's some of the music from there. So if you're a big Disney fan, that's something that you'll enjoy. But
the music in this movie was actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. That song that he plays with that that one scene.
Oh, with the Tesla coils? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cool.
I really like that song. Yeah. I might have to search out for that song.
Yeah, check the soundtrack for that one. What was I going to say? So overall, it was something that I had. It was enjoyable to me, but not on the same level that National Treasure was. I would say I would put National Treasure above this one, and it's the same director, so there is a direct correlation between those two series, John Turteltaub, and I think he's with National Treasure. I think he did this genre better and this type of movie better. And you talked about it earlier. Disney is kind of on this kick now where it feels to me the Pirates of the Caribbean formula, where they take something, whether it be a ride or a cartoon or something that the audience has a previous affinity towards or something know.
You've got Pirates of the Caribbean. You've got what's the one with Eddie Murphy?
Haunted Mansion.
Haunted Mansion. That's mm-hmm. them, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That tanked.
Yeah.
And then this one, and then Prince of Persia, kind of. That's more of a video game thing, but mm-hmm. I think it's the same concept. They're trying to start franchises.
Uh-huh.
You know? Definitely.
Well, after the success of Pirates, yeah, it was one of those things where Hollywood was like, okay, this is successful.
I don't think Pirates of the Caribbean was like they were trying to start a franchise. I think they just tripped
upon. Yeah, that's what was great about it. That's what I loved about the first Pirates, and I'm not a fan of the two sequels, but that's what I loved about the first one is that it kind of came out of nowhere for me, and I was like, oh, this is something that I wasn't expecting, and I really enjoyed this. And but it's that same
thing is though that like you said they weren't trying mm-hmm. for a sequel at that point, and now they're trying for sequel.
Yeah,
they're trying to set up three movies instead of just setting up one.
Well, I don't know if they weren't going for a sequel when they, because nowadays that's what they do. Like when they make a big movie, they sign the actors on for three movie options.
Mm-hmm. I think they have it in mind that we'll make a trilogy. They might have had it in mind, but I don't think that they were pushing it as hard with that movie as they are now with all these other movies, though. Uh-huh. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, you kind of can't blame them, right? I mean, that is the secret to the success.
Yeah, I don't blame them, because right? I guarantee you, if I had a way of making millions of dollars, I would freaking take it into
Well, isn't it what's expected by today's audiences? Like, isn't a sequel and then a threequel, isn't that expected? I mean, now we're at the point where Pirates of the Caribbean 4 is going to come out. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think we're just in a day and age where people expect multiple sequels. So you kind of have to set up your first movies now to be part of.
I think it's expected for big studios to do that. And
yeah,
but I mean, you see movies like Shutter Island. You see movies like, I mean, there's been, I would say,
Shutter Island
more movies that are single movies than. Then there are
I'm talking about like the big blockbuster type of movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess, I mean, I know people will milk the good movies are the ones that don't do that, though, or they don't plan on doing that and then end up becoming something good.
The Matrix.
I already hated Paranormal Activity, and now they're making a freaking Paranormal Craptivity too. And it's because the guy wants to freaking make a ton of money.
Yeah, but that's a horror movie. Like, that's part of the horror genre where they're just going to...
Yeah, but horror movies, a lot of my favorite horror movies don't necessarily have 100 in the series.
Like, no, but they'll have more than one. I mean, come on, even the Amityville Horror had more than one. And how many more?
Yeah, but Amityville Horror was the Amityville Horror and then the remake, right?
No.
That was another thing. Remakes, the same thing as sequels. It's cashing in on something that the audience already has knowledge of, and versus, you know, creating something totally original.
I don't know. I think there's plenty of movies that do. I mean, Scorsese is a great example, and
Yeah, but he did The Departed, which, in my opinion, did not need to be remade because the original is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm just saying, Scorsese is pretty good about not trying to start a series, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And that's the kind of the point. And I think a lot of good movies are ones that aren't trying to bank on America and bank on Hollywood.
But, you know, Scorsese is from a different era of filmmaking, though.
Yeah.
If you're a young director today, you know, this is what's expected of you, to be able to pull out multiple sequels for a big action.
I mean, say what you will about Apatow, but he at least tries to come up with original ideas every time he makes a movie.
Well, you could say that he's making the same movie over and over again, though, too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess so. The comedy is the same, but the actual story.
He's banking now on that one comedy, that dry humor, you know, he puts the same actors.
Yeah, but when you watch a Scorsese movie, you know what to expect, too. It's a style of movie making. I'm just saying, say what you will about the type of humor, but the guy actually comes up with a new story every time he tries to do a movie. If you like it or not, it doesn't matter. I mean, at least he's trying to be original, you know? That's respectable to me. When it's somebody trying, you know, I mean, there's a difference.
Well, look, you know, Scorsese did Goodfellas. He did Casino. I mean, that's in the same vein of
it's style. Movie. Like I said, it's style. Yeah, right. There's a difference between style and trying to make a sequel. You know what I mean?
See, but if this was today, right? If he was a new director today and he had a hit with Goodfellas, they would have been like Goodfellas too. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, and I'm sure they're going to ask Nolan, Inception 2, you know, like, if he's going to make money on this movie, they're going to ask him for another one. But, I mean, I think the respectable thing to do is, like, no, I would like to create something new with my time, you know, and that's respectable to me. And, you know, I'm not saying that I would go for the respectable option if it was up to me, because millions of dollars is millions of dollars, and I would probably go for that. But I'm just saying, I think the quality products come from the people that are respectable, and I don't think I would produce quality. And I think that the people that do produce quality usually aren't going for the money; they're going for their product. So,
there's a Jungle Cruise movie coming out in 2013.
Oh goodness!
Jungle Cruise? What the heck is that?
That's a ride at Disneyland.
I don't remember that one from when I went there. I've been to Disneyland a couple.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the one in California? Is Disneyland California? Okay, yeah. I haven't been to that one. I've been to Disney World.
No, Jen.
I live in Florida.
Jungle Cruise is like one of the most famous. That's along there with Pirates of the Caribbean as one of the most famous Disney rides. That's one of their big ones.
Maybe Disneyland. I don't remember it in Disney World.
No, it's in both.
It's in both, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it? I don't remember it. Maybe if I saw something like a video. I'll watch YouTube.
It's in Adventureland.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even remember what it is. It's like you're just, like, on it. It looks like a Jungle Cruise that you're on, and
that's one of those original attractions that they had. It's that, right. That's how long it's been there.
Right.
Yeah,
Now they have, like, the your tour guide basically, like, harasses you the whole trip. That's why that's why I don't go on it anymore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they'll be like, where are you from? And why are you wearing that hat? And they bother you through the whole trip.
Yeah. In Florida, it's in the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah. It's in Adventureland in Magic Kingdom.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember ever riding it. I mean, I went 100 times. So I must have at least once. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember. My most memorable moments was Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean, and it's a Small World. I'm sure they'll make an It's a Small World movie soon enough.
Well,
let's go ahead and get off the Sorcerer's Apprentice kind of thing. Before we move on to our Doom of the Week, let's go ahead and just run down real quickly our ratings of what we watched. Justin, what would you give Sorcerer's Apprentice, and then I'll give mine right after you.
I would give Sorcerer's Apprentice a 2.5 out of 5.
I'd give it probably about 3 out of 5. I would say that if you like Jay Baruchel and if you have some time and you've already seen Inception 4 times, then go ahead and see Sorcerer's Apprentice at a matinee or something like that. Eve, what would you give The Losers? I know you hate to do this, but I'm insisting.
I would give it a 6 out of 10.
you're fired.
Even though I'm the boss. Okay.
Hunter Kemp.
He's Tony Danza, and you're Alyssa Milano.
How could that? I'm his daughter?
That's awkward.
I'm Judith Light.
Yeah.
I'm actually 83 years old. I just sound very young.
You're the
you don't sound young at all.
Jen's
you sound
the grandmother, rich. And okay.
So, Hunter Scamp, what would you give Shutter Island?
I'd give it about 85%.
Yeah.
So that would be an 8.5 out of 10, yeah. Or a 4.5, or what, 4.75?
B plus
out of 5, and then. 85 out of 100.
Hunter gives it 3 like angry faces out of 4.
So now that we've got Hunter Scampi telling us what he thought of Shutter Island, and we've got all of our mini dooms out of the way, now it's on to the doom of the week. Doom of the week this week. We all got the chance to see Inception, some of us more times than one. So Inception, it's really hard to explain, but I would say the basic premise is that there is a new concept in, I guess this is a future world. I'm not sure if they actually ever say year or anything like that, but it seems kind of a futuristic world where... you have the ability to do something called dream sharing. And in the dream sharing, there's people that steal information. And in doing so, make a lot of money by stealing the information and giving it to corporations and all sorts of crazy stuff. And the basic premise is that Leonardo DiCaprio's character... is trying to get back to his home, and in order to do so, he has to do one last job. And the job, instead of stealing a thought, is to plant a thought into someone's head. And the concept is called Inception. And from there, all craziness ensues, and you get a very Matrix-esque. Filming style and some very, very interesting things that definitely deserve some rewatches. But basically, that's what it's about. Let's go ahead and start off with our guest this week. Hunter, what did you think of Inception?
Well, first of all, I loved it. Second of all, the concept of dream sharing isn't really isn't unrealistic. It sounds crazy, but... it's really just a matter of lucid dreaming. I've done a lot of research on this because I actually spent and this is so crazy. This sounds so insane. I spent a good, like, maybe 5-6 months of my life
trying to share a dream with Nicolas Cage.
No. but lucid dreaming, and that's actually what's going on in this movie. It's basically when you realize you're dreaming. And the scene with Ellen Page and Leonardo DiCaprio at the cafe where they're discussing it and where he's asking her, you know, like, how did you get here? And then she can't put it together. And then she realizes she's dreaming and then realizes that she has control over the dream. That's exactly how it works. And I've actually read a lot of articles and studies on it where people have actually dream shared. And I've talked to a few people that have dream shared. I've never done that. But I mean, it's so crazy, but I mean, people actually do this. It's not as I don't think it's as organized as what's going on in this movie, but the concept is actually real, and they get it right, which is really, really impressive. But I really, really, really love this movie for like everything about it.
So let's go ahead and move to Eve. What did you think about the movie?
Well, I really enjoyed the movie a lot, and I think it definitely was released at the right time in the right year where I think people are starting to get a little annoyed with having everything in 3D, having everything sequels, having everything CGI animated characters. And yes, that those are the things that are big in this time. But I think there is a group of people who just are kind of tired of that and want something different. And I think that's what Inception brings to the table. Definitely, it's an intelligent movie. It gets you thinking, and I think it's one of those movies where you want to see it again because you know that every time you see it, you'll probably catch something new. So, and the acting was really good, and I just thought it was it really was suspenseful. It was 2.5 hour movie, but I didn't feel it at all at any time that I was like, wow, how long is this movie, or when is it going to end, and I don't recall any times where I felt like, okay, the movie just went dead, you know, for 20 minutes, like we've seen in previous movies this year, where you have a movie that's going strong, and then all of a sudden it dies, like we talked about in Predators, where Lawrence Fishburne's character shows up and then the movie kind of fizzles out for 20 minutes. I didn't feel that there were any moments like that in Inception. So I thought it was a really great movie, and the audience I saw it with was definitely really into it. And when the movie ended, everybody went like, whoa, you know, like there was like a collective, like, whoa, like my mind was just blown from this movie. So
yeah.
I would definitely recommend it. It's a really good movie.
So, Justin, what did you think of Inception?
Yeah, I had the same reaction as everybody. And what Eve just said about the 2.5 hour running time, I didn't notice it until I saw it the first time. And then I went back and I was reading up some stuff on it. And I saw running time, 148 minutes. And I was like, oh, man, I didn't even realize how long it was. And normally, I'm a fan of 90-minute movies. You know, get in, get out, tell the story, and be done with it. And even for me, 2 hours sometimes is pushing it. But 2.5 hour, 3 hour movies, I'm not a big fan of. But with this one, the only other movie that I can say that I didn't notice the time is The Dark Knight, which is 5 minutes longer than Inception. And that's the same experience I had with Inception. Even when I watched it the second time, I still didn't feel like any of the movie dragged, or I was looking at my watch anytime. I was totally immersed in the world of the movie. So that, for me, is a big thumbs up.
Well, like when as far as you know, you guys are talking about the like run times, there's a specific point in every movie where I actually look at the clock on my phone, mm-hmm. and it's always at about like, and it's just because I'm like, okay, you know, like, well, this feels like the, you know, right where it's about to end, like there's gonna be like 20 minutes left in the movie.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and it was like 2 hours after, like, I sat down for the movie and I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a scene though where I thought, like, and I think it was after about 2 hours, where it's not that I felt like it should end, but I thought, like, so I can't remember what had happened on screen, but I kind of was like, oh, are they gonna sort of wrap it up here? And then
the climax, whenever they're showing four layers.
Right.
Yeah, see, I got it on the third layer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like right when they got into the snow level, if you will.
Right, you thought that's how they were going to end it there.
And that's where they started. So. Yeah.
But with the length, real quickly before I say what I think about the movie. The length, the only reason I even noticed that it was anywhere near as long as it was for one, I work at a movie theater and we have to look at the run times, and two, I drank an entire soda and I had to pee. So I'm sitting there like, I don't want to move, because it's one of those movies where you have to pay attention to every detail. So like I'm sitting there holding it and I'm like, oh God. And then finally it ends. I'm like, holy crap, I've had to pee for the last 45 minutes. And ran out of the movie. That's the only reason I even noticed that it was as long as it was, and it wasn't at all that had anything to do with the movie not working correctly. It just, I really had to use the bathroom. And but I mean, Inception as a whole, though, I mean, really one of my favorite movies of all time. I can't say that it is my favorite yet, because it's so fresh in my mind that I would have to compare it to my favorite movies of all time to see, but it is definitely something that I think deserves at least one to two rewatches. It definitely deserves all of your attention, and if you're not paying attention, then it could very easily become a quote-unquote bad movie because you don't know what's going on. And but I mean, everything about the movie just, it completely and totally impressed me. I mean, I wanted to see it, but I didn't expect anywhere near the amount of attention to detail and I mean, strength of cast or any of that stuff, and it just completely and totally blew me out of the water. I mean, I couldn't believe this movie even exists in a world where we have, you know, Twilight making the most amount of money in the world, and you know, I think I just heard Land Before Time 14 is going to come out soon or something like that, crazy like that. I mean, when you have a world like that, it's very impressive that something that is this well made is only going to make $60 million. I mean, really.
Well, it made $60 million in 2 days. So.
Yeah, and this is really one of those types of movies
that's going to
pick up steam.
It's just a 3 day prediction total, actually. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I really hope that it's going to continue to pick up steam, and I really hope people will go rewatch it. I've already watched it twice. I'm planning on going to see it in an IMAX.
Yeah, same here.
I want to see it in IMAX so badly.
I'm actually going as soon as I get to California for my vacation. I'm going to go see Inception in IMAX, and I'm probably going to see it another at least one or two times. Just because every time you watch it, I think you do find something new. I found something new the second time I watched it. I found a couple things new the second time I watched it. It was very enjoyable. But I really am excited to talk some spoilers, so let's go ahead and get into that. All right, so I just want to start off by saying that one of my favorite parts about this movie is the interpretation and the discussion that you can have through the interpretation of the movie. This is, like I said, the spoilers are going to be galore, and like, there's a couple of scenes that really, really impressed me for the interpretation. One in particular that sticks out in my mind is the fact that in the bathroom scene when he is like freaking out about seeing his wife with Ellen Page's character, and he never finishes spinning the top. You know what scene I'm talking about, in the bathroom, and mm-hmm. He's about to, and then they're like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah." And he just never finished spinning.
Yeah, he was like washing his face, right? He was like all freaked out.
At that point, you don't even know if he's in a dream or not. So, like, from that point in the movie, you can actually argue that he's in a dream the entire time. Mm-hmm. That he never actually even does the plan. Another scene that really sticks out. Another part that really sticks out is obviously the ending, but tied into the ending, you also have the fact that for him to go get I'm going to be horrible with this because I don't remember the characters' names. The guy that he made the deal with to get back to America.
Yeah, that was Ken Watanabe.
Saito. Mm-hmm.
Ken Watanabe.
Yeah.
Watanabe. I think his name was Saito.
Yeah.
Or something? Yeah. He has to go. He either has to go to another level, or he has to somehow end up on that beach. And it doesn't show you how he ends up on that beach, whether he goes into a fourth level of dreaming, or
fifth? Wouldn't it be See, that's where I was confused, because the level.
Yeah, four. I'm sorry, fifth. I'm sorry, fifth. The level where the quote unquote limbo. Was the fourth. He would have to either go to the fifth or somehow fall onto the beach, which was like at least, I would say, half a mile to a mile
away. How did he get to the beach?
Yeah, and they don't show you how he got there. And I think that, like I said, I think this is purposeful so that you can interpret it your own way. They also don't show the fact that how does he kick himself out? If he does go another level or if he doesn't, how does he kick himself and the other character out of that level. to get back to the third, second, first, and regular world.
Well, I think it was when he realized, when they talked to each other and they said, you know, once I remember you in a half-remembered dream, and when they saw when Saito saw the totem and Leonardo DiCaprio remembered, because they had forgotten each other, and then when they remembered, that's when the kick happened. They realized they were dreaming.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
See, I thought that with the levels that they were in, that there was no way to escape without an actual physical kick like they show with the other levels. Mm-hmm. But regardless, I think that with those questions there, that gives you a lot of room for interpretation, and I think that's the best part about it.
With that scene in particular, going back to Mai and Dom when they were in the limbo level. Mm-hmm. Initially, when they killed themselves, and that brought them back to, I guess, reality in that world, you know, from that world, like when they got run over by the train.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the gun was on the table. So I think that also helps you lead to believe that, you know, they realized what was going on and they killed themselves, much like, you know, Mai and Mal, and Dom did before. Mm-hmm. Mal? Was it that it?
Mal.
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
See, it was my understanding that because of the type of anesthesia or the type of it's not anesthesia, sedative that they were using, that if they killed themselves, that they would just get stuck anyways.
Yeah, because that's what DiCaprio said. If you die while you're in one of the levels, then you don't get woken up like you do on level one or whatever. You go into limp.
Yeah, but they were saying like also when you die in level one. So if you were to die in level one, you would go into limbo. You wouldn't wake up with that sedative. They never said specifically what would happen in limbo if you were to kill yourself. And the reason that I take that interpretation is because of Mal and Dom when they killed themselves before and then they jumped out.
But they weren't under the heavy sedatives.
Yeah,
I don't think that they clarified that. But the fact that they
were under. They went to get the chemist, and it was sort of like the chemist was like, it can't be done. And they were like, yeah, let's just use your drugs and we can get it done. So this was their first time under sedation like that.
But also the fact that they made it to limbo is what I'm saying. Like the fact that they went down that far, like the sedatives could have no effect on limbo. Like that's obviously that's something that's open for interpretation, like Jen was saying. But you know, the reason I'm led to believe that is because of just what was given to us, because, again, they didn't say anything about actually being in limbo. And the fact that Kaito? Like, what was his name?
Saito.
Yeah.
Okay. When he had been there the 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what also the situation with Mal and Dom too, like that
they would still be under sedative though for I can't be precise on the math, but the next level, the fourth level, if this is still the fourth level, then mm-hmm. it would be over 100 years. It would be probably closer to like 1,000, I think.
Right.
So if this is a fifth level, it's even like crazier number than that. So he would be under sedative for like more than he could live. So
why wasn't Cobb? Why wasn't he as advanced in age as Saito was?
Well, that's why I'm saying I think it's a fifth level of dreaming instead of just a fourth.
I only saw three levels and then limbo. And if you want to count limbo,
how is it limbo though? How did they get to that limbo stage?
Well, we know Saito died in the dream, and that's how he got to the limbo.
Right.
And Leonardo DiCaprio was the only person who had been there before, and he was creating with his wife, and that's why you saw that limbo was what he had already created in his dream. So
is limbo a shared limbo? Because I was confused.
But how did they get to the same limbo?
Well, remember, they explained that. Yeah, they said, I'm sorry, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character said, they were asking him, well, what happens if we die here? And he was like, well, it's just infinite nothing unless someone else has been there before. And Leonardo DiCaprio had been there before. So limbo for all of them who were sharing the dream became Leonardo DiCaprio's limbo previously.
Okay.
So he had already created that. And with the Saito thing where he was aging versus Leonardo DiCaprio, I kind of took that as, if you remember, they showed the shot where when him and his wife were down there, they aged.
Yeah, but, they did age.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But remember, they didn't show that until the very end when they showed like the old hands.
The hands like, yeah. And everything.
So
yeah.
I was thinking like Leonardo DiCaprio, it could just be that you're perceiving him as his younger self, but he actually did age the same way when he was trying to find Saito all those years. And then
right.
When they woke up from that, I kind of took it as the sedative wore off because it was a timed kind of thing where they right. wanted to wake up. So that was kind of the way that I perceived it.
Mm-hmm. So he could just remember it. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think that like I said, the best part about all of that is that it's open to interpretation.
Yeah.
That you mm-hmm. can take it any way you want. I still say there's a little bit of confusion as to how he ends up on a beach from where he was before and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, how
stuff.
Did he get from the house lying
which could be
down.
Years, like you said. Like it could yeah. be.
Well, it would have to be years. You
he was walking around looking
right,
for him.
Searching.
And then,
well, there's another way to look at that. Like when Dom like gets rid of Mal, basically, like when she's killed, you know, the whole that limbo is crashing down. You know, like, and I believe that's worked in through, like, the snow, like, the avalanche, the, like, with everything. Like, with everything that's going on outside of it. That limbo is being or DiCaprio's, I guess, construction of that is being destroyed as Saito is creating his own. So, his version of limbo is being destroyed, and Saito has he died also. If I'm not mistaken, he died also like a little bit before Saito.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like he died on that third level.
Yeah,
and you know, so that also brings him down there. If it's happening at the same time, you know, Saito's constructing this world, and as we saw from the beginning of the film, and actually the first dream sequence, that was still like the same area, mm-hmm. it seemed.
Yeah.
So the fact that he went straight to that and he's creating that right away, it's not to me unbelievable that with DiCaprio's crashing version, that he would have, and if it's flooding like it seemed to have been, to wash him up against whatever is there now, mm-hmm. which would be Saito's version of Limbo.
Yeah.
Right.
So with all that stuff put together, I think, and the cast, I think, I don't know about you guys, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt is really, really strong in this movie. And
I thought everybody was.
I think everybody was too. I just think he really stood out to me, and it made me think about other movies he's been in, like G.I. Joe, where he's been wasted, and you could see how well he does. I think that the entire cast is very, very well cast, for one, and two, very good actors. And I was very impressed by everyone. I think that it's very good that they can actually have a cast, I mean, have the characters that they do, where you really don't have a lot of connection to some, if not all of them. And you still want to know what happens to them. Like, to me, Leonardo DiCaprio is not necessarily the best person in the world that you want to be like, especially after you find out everything about him, yet you still want to know what happens to him.
And I think you still care.
Yeah.
Well, that's where I disagree with you guys. And, you know, I know that on Twitter, all three of you kept saying that this is a perfect movie without a flaw, and it's the best movie of the year and one of the best movies ever made, and that's fine. You know, I'm glad you guys loved it, because that's really cool, and I really enjoyed it myself. But I did have a couple of issues with it that would make it not my favorite movie ever, and not a movie that I would say is perfect for me or the best movie ever. And one of my issues was definitely that I did not fall in love with these characters. Like, they don't have to be morally superior or anything like that for me to love them, but, like, for whatever reason, I just didn't care enough about these characters. And, like, you know, when we find out that if they die in limbo, they'll be stuck in limbo, I kind of was like, sucks for them. Like, I really didn't care. You know, I wasn't like, oh, no, you have to get them back from the mission because I want to see more of them. I want to know more of their lives. I want to know what they do from here.
But you know? I think that's the beauty of it, is that you don't need to love the characters, and that the characters aren't necessarily the most lovable characters in the first place. I think it's more about, supposed to be about the dream itself. And I think you liking the dream more than you like the people is totally normal. And actually, right. I one of the ways that Nolan wants people to look at the movie, you know?
No, but even though you know they're not supposed to be 100% likable people because they're basically criminals, they're immoral. The premise of the entire mission is an immoral one. You know, they're going to go into they're going to go into this person's mind who's basically, you know, Cillian Murphy's character. He's innocent. Like, this is just a man who's like losing his father and is going to inherit a company, and he's going about his life, and these people are going to go into his mind because they're hired by his business rival. And so, okay, you don't have to love them, but my point was that it's like I liked them for what they were, but I wasn't like emotionally invested in them. It's like, you know, you think of a movie like Inglourious Basterds where you have characters that are immoral and who you should despise, but for whatever reason, like, you like their portrayal, you like them. And what I felt about Inception is that I don't think not one character got to me, you know, to the point
difference between the Inglourious Basterds characters. They're a little bit despicable, but for a different reason. The despicableness for them is more of they're fighting somebody that's even more despicable. You know what I mean? Whereas the characters in Inception, they might be a little bit despicable for what they do and why they do it, but there is not real redemption in it.
They're
doing it for themselves.
Like them.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying.
I'm not saying I like that I like the way they're.
I'm not judging your, you know.
I like the actors.
No. What I'm saying is the characters. You said you liked Joseph Gordon-Levitt, right? You liked his character, and you liked how he portrayed the character, and you, right?
I said he was a strong actor. Yes.
But it's like his character. If he would have died in the first 5 minutes and I never saw him again, I would have been fine with that.
Yeah, like, which, like I said, they're despicable for themselves, not for anybody else.
But. If I don't want to see these people over and over again, if I don't care, then I can't say that this movie was the perfect movie for me.
Nobody said that this movie is perfect. I said that it's great and it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
I think you did. And matter of fact, you told me via email that you were going to prove to me how this perfect movie and that I was quote unquote wrong in thinking that it was not perfect.
I actually said it was the best movie, and
I use the phrase perfect.
Yeah.
So in an email to me, he said perfect, and then he said, I can't wait to prove you wrong, and then he tweeted at me, I can't
actually,
wait.
Actually, Hunter said it was perfect, and you said, yes. I don't think it's perfect, like, said, I think it is.
You guys were going to give me scientific proof as to the perfectness of this movie.
Well,
and
why would you say, here's my question. You just said earlier in our review that you liked the actors and that they did a great job. Yet you don't, like, if they did such a great job, then why don't you care?
It's not the acting that I have a problem with. It's the actual characters themselves. I did not fall in love with these characters.
To fall in love with a character.
But it's not... I don't know
why
how
would
to
you watch it again
you.
If you don't
okay,
like it.
Because not for the characters, but because of everything, all the layers in it. I feel like
that's
the more
my
you
point,
watch
though,
it,
that Nolan,
the more you'll see.
That's
you know
my
what I
point,
mean?
Though, like, that is that Nolan doesn't necessarily want you to fall in love with the characters. They're a plot device to bring you the actual.
Well, but that's my issue. Like, there's not enough character development. in it, you know? Like,
there's plenty because you don't...
Yeah, I thought that there was the appropriate amount for what was going on in
But I think it has to do with the fact that the main character of this story is the Dream. And that's the reason why you want to watch the movie, is the way the Dream works and the shared dream and how it all works, not because of the character. I mean, I do enjoy the characters, and I do think that they are essential to the story, but I think that the main character here is the Dream and how it works. And that's the genius of the movie.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me try to explain this in another way. I went to see Where the Wild Things Are, right? Now, did you guys like that movie?
I mean, in a weird way, yeah, but I don't think it was the best movie ever. Yeah. I enjoyed it, but
yeah, I liked it.
Okay. Now, like, everything about that movie should have been a movie that I really liked, okay? I should have went to see it, and I should have been like, wow, I can't wait to see this again. I'm going to get the DVD. It was very much a movie that I think is something that really would, like, should have been a movie that I loved. And I went to see it, and something about it just rubbed me the wrong way. And I said, you know what? I never want to see this movie again. Because even though it was a well-made movie, it, like, all the components, if you take the components and put them together, they were a perfect formula. But something about it just made me be like, I don't love this world. I don't love this universe, and I don't love these characters. So no matter how well-made it is or how well put together it is, I'm not in love with it. Now, that is a severe example, because that movie I really don't ever want to see again, okay? Well, I feel like I've been traumatized by it.
Are you a Spike Jonze fan? Like, do you like anything else he's done?
I wouldn't say I was a fan, but I don't think I've never had this kind of reaction, though, mm-hmm. to one of his movies, you know?
Yeah.
And so how I feel with Inception is that I kind of just felt not as severe. You know, because like I said, I do want to see the movie again, and I like that it's just so multi-layered, and there's just so much to get out of every single viewing. But as far as the characters themselves go, like, I just didn't love them. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like I said on Twitter yesterday about Star Trek. Like, to me, last year's Star Trek, that was my favorite movie of the year. I love that movie. When it came out on DVD, I watched it every single day for a month. Okay, and it's not only because I love the Star Trek universe, but I love those characters. Like, I love them. So I just felt like in this movie, none of the characters were endearing enough to like, pull my heartstrings enough for me to say, like, oh, I just love it. Not only that, the universes, while they were cool, I mean, there was, like, some really cool elements to them, I wasn't in love with the universe either. Like, it's not the kind of place where you're like, I want to go to that universe. You know, that was just my opinion. I'm not saying, you know, I'm right or whatever. It's, you know, film criticism obviously is subjective. So, you know, that was just my reaction to it.
But here's my best analogy for this. And I'm not sure if everyone's going to understand this, because not everybody's probably seen the show. But Lost is a perfect example of this. The people that were invested in the show for the characters and the enjoyment of seeing where they go and all sorts of stuff really enjoyed the way the show went. But there were some people that thought the most important character was the island itself.
Right.
And the mystery of it and all that other stuff. And they were disappointed because that character arc didn't necessarily pay off the way they wanted it to. Okay? To me, Inception kind of has the same kind of analogy, where you've got characters and then you've got the actual dreamscape itself, which is another character. And I think that Nolan obviously spent a lot more time on his main character, which is the dreamscape. And I think he'd spent plenty of time on the other characters, but I don't think he made them for you to focus on them specifically because he wanted you to focus on the dreamscape. So the fact that you don't connect with the characters is supposed to happen. And
see, I kind of disagree with that, because I felt the exact opposite. Like, I saw the dream as just like a landscape, and each of these characters, with obviously the main character being Leonardo DiCaprio, like how he was dealing with everything, how he was struggling with his past, what he has done, and how that's affecting him overall. And I thought that they did a brilliant job with that. And I thought that they did a brilliant job with the father and son moments. I felt that those were great scenes with great character work. I don't think that each character was, you know, completely developed, but I think the way the movie was made is, you know, you have this cast of characters and you have a list of importance, and with that list of importance, you have a amount of character development. It obviously started with Leonardo DiCaprio. DiCaprio was, I thought, in my opinion, an incredibly well-developed character, and then kind of going down the scale with each one, and I think that that's how it was meant to be, and I think that that was a perfect way to do that.
Right. I mean, like, you don't really need to know a lot about the chemist,
mm-hmm.
right, to enjoy the movie. But like I said, it wasn't that they're not perfect characters, so I don't like them. It wasn't that. It was just, I just didn't connect with them. Like, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, right? It's like, I kind of liked him in the beginning until I got to know him better. And then I was like, thought not to like him. And, you know, I almost liked him better when I thought he was just this clever dream thief who made his living by going into people's dreams and stealing secrets, you know, like that he was just like a super spy. And then when you find out, like, he really just does it because he can't really make a living any other way because he's been framed. And, you know, and the more you get to know him, the more it was like, well, I kind of thought he was cooler the other way. But I mean, but again, that I'm not saying that I dislike the film because of that. I'm just saying that, like, I just don't love these characters. Like, if they made Inception action figures, I wouldn't buy any of them. That's what I'm saying.
See, that's where I'm saying that Hunter is – you actually didn't disagree with me. You actually said the exact same thing as that I was saying, is that they are – character. Their characters are developed and everything like that. And what I'm saying is that Eve is – the reason
you admitted that Nolan – well, in your mind, Nolan – put more work into building the
dreamscape than he did to build the character. More emphasis on the dreamscape because it's the more important character.
But I don't think
that's what I disagree with.
Yeah, I think the characters were supposed to be more important.
I took it that way.
Built by the characters. The dreams are built by their minds and their subconscious. So,
and see, I took it that way, and I wasn't disappointed. Like that's what I'm saying. Is like, I feel like the characters were developed perfectly, and that's what
I never said they weren't. That's my point.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, to me personally, I didn't see it that the dreamscape was the most important thing.
I think it was. I think if you didn't have that, the Inception wouldn't be a movie.
And see, that's fine, but I'm saying that, like, with you could easily strip away the dream sequence and deal with Leonardo DiCaprio and I guess his gang of misfits, if you will. It's a movie about a guy that is incredibly guilty for the life that he's led and is searching for some sort of happiness and can't seem to find it. And to me, that's a compelling story. You know, I would go see a movie like that at any time. So I really, really enjoyed that.
See,
like, you could set that.
I'm afraid to start this because I don't want to get interrupted again. Mm. But I'm just saying that you're not supposed to fall in love with his character. You're supposed to enjoy the mystery behind everything and the dreamscapes and stuff like that. How can you relate to someone that does what he does for a living while being normal? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, he's not supposed to be someone you fall in. He's supposed to be someone that you're like, oh, I don't know if I like this guy because of what he's done. That's the point. You're not supposed
to. Yeah, but I said I liked him better when I thought he was just a dream.
Exactly. You're supposed to like him less as you find out more about him. That's the point. That's why I'm saying it accomplishes that.
Why are you supposed to like him less as you know?
Because
I took it that you're supposed to sympathize with him the more you get to know him, because this is a man who lost his wife and was framed and can't see his children.
And
so
then
why,
what does he
why
do? And then
you
what?
With him?
what did he do in order to make this all happen? He planted a thought in her head that told her that she would have to kill herself to get to the real world. How are you supposed to like that?
Because he was trying to get her out of the
saying
space.
That made you not like him anymore.
Well,
no, but I mean, he was.
But that's like I don't look at it that way.
He had
like,
good intentions. I see it as behind that.
Yeah, like right, I saw exactly. his intentions, and I felt compassionate towards him. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't dislike him anymore as the movie went along, and I don't feel like I feel like they did a good enough job for me that I actually did feel compassionate for him. And the guilt of him knowing that ended up what he had planted in her mind was what caused her real death, her actual death.
Right.
When that was his intention at all.
It was basically an accident on his point. You know, yeah. that was inadvertent.
Well, then why did you like his character before and then not like his character later on? I'm confused now because now you're saying that you agree with everyone else that
no. It's like let me try to explain. It was like when you first see him. He seems like just like, you know, I wasn't going on like his morals. I was just going by like how he acted, his confidence. And, you know, you thought like, oh, this is going to be like a badass dream thief guy or whatever. And then you get to know like what's really behind his actions. And I just felt like I kind of started to I did sympathize with him. But it didn't make me like him anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's like I just didn't. And you know what? I liked him.
But
the best.
What made you dislike him, though? You just said that you liked him at the beginning, and then
I didn't dislike him. I said I liked him more in the beginning when I thought he was just like this character who goes in and steals dreams, and you know, like. And then the more I got to know him, the more I was like, well, you know. Like, I sort of lost interest in him, I guess you could say. I didn't dislike him, but I was starting to lose interest in him.
Yeah. For me, I think the crux of the movie doesn't rest on whether I like the characters or not, because, especially with this one, like I said, with talking about the running time, I was so immersed in the movie that I felt I was a part of the movie and I was one of the guys in the movie. So I was kind of placing mm-hmm. myself in the movie and I wasn't so much focused on, okay, which character am I latching on to and which character do I like the most or which one can I relate to the most? I was just along for the ride and it was like, okay, this guy is this way, this guy is this way. And I don't know if it's necessarily the intention of the director that you're supposed to like him or supposed to dislike him. I think everyone makes their own interpretation of it. And that's what I like about the movie is that I think it's very ambiguous, not only the storyline, but how you feel about the characters as well, because everyone's going to feel a different way about different characters. I remember when I was younger and I did not like Darth Vader because he was a villain. He was a bad guy. I was like, oh, I only like, I only like Luke Skywalker. I don't see why people like Darth Vader. But then as I grow older, I was like, oh, okay, well, there's something endearing about this villain. And you saw that with Hans Landa in Inglourious, where right. he's one of my favorite characters. And so I'm saying there are people who hate Hans Landa because he's a bad guy and because he does irreprehensible things, whereas I look at it different way. So I think people perceive different characters different ways. Everyone has their own perception of the characters, right. whether you like them or not.
You know what? I think that you hit the nail on the head. I think that's what I'm trying to say is that even you could be bad, you could be morally bankrupt, or you could be totally innocent and wonderful, mm-hmm. but it's the charisma. That's what I felt was missing from these yeah. characters to me. Like, they were not charismatic enough, and mm-hmm. it wasn't enough to me. Like, when the movie ended, I too was along for the ride because you're just, like, really paying attention because you want to see what happens next, and you're like, I have to follow this. I have to make sure I'm catching everything. And so when the movie ended, you know, like, every step of the way, you're like, what will happen next? What will happen next? So I guess, like, in my mind, I was thinking, like, is this a movie that I would want to see again and again and again and again when I know the end result?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure. Like, again, I think I want to see it again because, first of all, I should point out, I meant to say this in the beginning, that the screening I went to, there was definitely a problem with the sound because the score, which I thought was a great score, was overpowering a lot of the dialogue. And, you know, I had to sit there with, like, my hand cupped behind my ear. Mm-hmm. And a few times I would lean over to Dave and be like, what did they just say? And he'd be like, I don't know, you know. So there was definitely something wrong in my screening. And that definitely put a damper on it for me. And then I went online and I checked, and other people were also saying that they had this problem where there would be dialogue and the score would just be like so loud over it. So did anybody have any kind of experience like that?
Not with the score, but for me, I had a problem with both Ken Watanabe, who's a Japanese actor, and Marion Cotillard, who's a French actress. I like both of them as actors. I love everybody in the cast, but those two in particular, their accents are so thick. There were times where it was kind of hard to understand what they were saying. So I had kind of a similar experience, but I never noticed. I guess because I love the score so much, I don't know if I noticed it because I was kind of engrossed in the movie. I don't know.
Well, I know there was definitely a part where, like, Ellen Page is telling she's telling Leonardo DiCaprio something like, we have to do this. And it's obvious that she's like shouting it. Mm-hmm. And yet I could barely hear what she said. Like, I had to read her lips to understand. Like, she said something like, we have to get out of here or something, whatever it was. And the score was just pounding over it.
I think it was supposed to, though. I think he was.
Yeah, but that like was that. During the whole movie, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, it just sounded. Not every scene, but a lot of scenes. Like, for me to be like, what is going on?
I think there was a lot of that during DiCaprio, like, being distracted because it was supposed to show that he's not paying attention because of his wife.
No, this was, like, people explaining things.
Because the one that you're talking
about. And the score just blasting over it. Dun, dun, mm-hmm. like that. Just blasting over it. And, like, you see the person, like, they got a close-up on the person, like, you know, Saito, and he's like, and I know what you're doing, and this and that, and blah, blah. And it's just like, dun, 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 mm-hmm. dun, dun, you know, like, right over it. And with his, like Justin said, his accent is so strong that I couldn't even really, like, read his lips to understand what he was saying. And, like I said, I went online and I Googled to see, like, oh, problems with whatever, and there was a lot of people said the same thing. Actually, Den of Geek, you know, they wrote something about it this week saying the same thing where, you know, good luck understanding what some of the characters are saying. Hmm. So,
yeah, I don't know.
That definitely was an issue.
Absolutely no issue with hearing it.
You know, in a movie where the dialogue is essential to understanding what's happening, that was like a major issue.
Yeah, that was one of the few negatives that I saw from people who were writing reviews and talking about the movie was there was so much exposition and there were so many rules that you had to learn and understand that it took away from the movie because most of the movie is them explaining what's going to happen and setting up the world.
There was a lot of rules, and then they would change the rules really quickly, and then you would see, like, Ellen Page's character, who she's there to be, like, oh, we have to explain it to her, she's new. So that's how you get all that exposition. And then when they do something that, let's say they explain something to her, and then they go against it, it's her that goes, like, wait, I thought you weren't allowed to do that. And they're like, we're doing it. So they did that a lot in the movie, where they would set up these rules, and then they'd say, like, oh, we're breaking them now. And it's kind of funny because they broke all these rules, yet they managed to accomplish the mission. you know?
I know what you're saying, but I don't think those were necessarily rules. I think those were things that Leonardo DiCaprio's character said, you shouldn't do this. And then later, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character was like,
yeah,
now you
like,
see how long or how many times he breaks or, you know,
he breaks his own rules.
He says you shouldn't do.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily a rule of the universe, but
yeah, that's the same concept as, you know, a veteran soldier telling a, you know, a rookie or even a cop, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, these are the things that you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
And then it's like, with the experience that they've had, it's like you can break it a little bit, you know, and you can bend and twist here and there to get the results that you actually need to get. But it's real advice saying that you should not do this.
Same thing as if I told you you shouldn't pee in a public restroom at an HEB because they're gross and nasty.
But if it's necessary, you really got to pee.
You really got to pee.
The only time that I felt the rules were necessarily either broken or I just didn't understand was, and I was listening to Dave Chen did an audio boo, and they were talking about their kind of nitpick problems with the movie, and whenever they had their weapons, now they could have brought those weapons with them in a backpack or whatever, but that was never really explained. They just kind of, they had weapons all of a sudden. And so that's kind of like, that wasn't really set up. Can they conjure up weapons in the dream levels?
Well, how about the
it's the landscaping.
No. The Forger, remember, he showed up all of a sudden with a bigger gun, and didn't someone say to him, why didn't you bring that sooner?
No, he said you have to imagine bigger.
This is the line. No, wait.
So why didn't they just imagine gigantic?
That's not a natural thing. It's like you have to, like, if this is based on subconscious and what you're thinking, it's like you're not thinking.
But
like,
he was saying,
oh, I'm going to
use a bigger gun. Basically, he wasn't. Mm-hmm. He wasn't actually saying imagine a bigger gun. What they did is they actually planned and backup planned everything. And when she was doing those architecture plans, they put things in certain places so that they could have them there. Like, if something happened, they knew where to go get the guns. If something happened, they knew where to. Everything was. Was actually built in the world beforehand.
Well, see, that was your interpretation. They never actually specifically said that. But I want to go back to the actual quote, because that was my favorite line of the movie, so I don't want you guys to mess it up. He said, "You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling." That was my absolute favorite line of the movie. Mm-hmm. So that's what Ames said when he brought out that bigger gun.
But the whole point of the movie, by the way, is that you're supposed to interpret it your own way anyway.
Well, see,
it's not supposed to be spelled out.
No,
that's the point.
I think you're saying there are all these you're supposed to, and that's your interpretation. I don't think this is necessarily a right or wrong. It's like
interpretation. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
No, you're interpreting it that the movie is up for all interpretation, whereas... We might not feel that way.
Yeah, you're putting your interpretations on us. You're saying you're supposed to.
Okay, well, what I'm saying
this.
Is that I think that's the way it's supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find that they just magically make them, that's fine. But I'm just saying, there's a very distinct possibility that if they spent weeks and months on planning the way the buildings look, that they might actually put some guns somewhere.
So now,
that they didn't take into consideration that he had been prepared for this.
Right. Like I was going to say, they know that when you go into someone's subconscious, that person's subconscious then tries to attack you to get you out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew that was going to happen, and we saw that happen at least twice, where the person who's dreaming it, whatever, like. The people in it attack the dreamer. So they had to have known that they would have been up against, you know, defenses. So why didn't they bring bigger guns or whatever?
No,
they didn't know, though, because he had
they didn't.
Training.
He explained that they didn't realize that these guys were going to be he was trained. Cillian Murphy's character was trained for this type of...
By someone that was like Leonardo DiCaprio's character.
It was his subconscious was... They were like militarily trained, and they weren't prepared for that, because there's that scene where Leonardo DiCaprio is yelling at Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's like, "We weren't prepared for this."
Right, right.
Yeah. So and
the only other time we saw that was in Leonardo DiCaprio's dream sequence when Ellen Page started to get attacked, because he was also prepared for it. And then Saito also knew about it too.
So if Leonardo DiCaprio is prepared for it, then why didn't the people in his dream have guns?
Because he was letting Ellen Page in his.
Well, they attacked her anyway.
Yeah.
Right, but they weren't.
But he was
military. I think honestly, watching it, I was like, "Oh, nice way to get like a military machine gun battle into this movie." Basically.
Yeah, which was awesome, and that was one of the best action sequences I've seen in a long time. But I can see where people are not understanding that. But then you tiptoe that line of how much exposition, because like I said, some people are already saying there's too much exposition. So how do you tiptoe that balance of not explaining enough or over-explaining the movie.
There's too much exposition because they're not doing enough showing. You know, there's like a lot of tell and not enough show.
Well, that was my problem with Ellen Page's character, and you mentioned it before. If I have my biggest flaw with the movie is Ellen Page's character being the audience, and she really has no other purpose than either she's every time you see her, she's either someone is telling her something or she's asking a question like why is this happening
or coming to a conclusion on her
own. And so she really has no, besides being a great maze creator or architect, she really has no other feature to her character or
she was the conscience of Cobb's too. I mean,
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, like
that's three purposes.
Here's the thing though. She's his conscience, but guess what? She shouldn't even be there to begin with, because when she found out, he told her the mission that they were going on, that he was hiring for. He says it's not exactly legal. She knew what it was, that they were going to go into the mind of this businessman and plant a seed in his mind to whatever disperse his company, so that Saito can then pretty much like be the number one in that industry. That's pretty immoral. Like, that's not very, it's not like they said, we're going to go into this mind and dismantle this man because he's a horrible criminal, committed atrocities. You know, she basically, Leonardo DiCaprio said, she'll be back because she can't stay away. Basically, she can't stay away from the thrill. Mm-hmm. So then to make her his moral compass makes no sense.
Well, that's why I was trying to make a point earlier that they're not necessarily the most moral characters in the world, and you're not necessarily supposed to connect with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mal really didn't.
Because they're
even
thieves before that,
she wasn't. She was just some student.
Yeah, okay? But when he first introduced her to the dreamscape, he also said, we steal people's thoughts. So at that point, she didn't freak out.
But she also wasn't going to go into the dream initially. It was only after she found out more about Mal that she insisted on going in as well.
Mm-hmm. But if you think about it,
and that makes sense. I mean, like, without her there, you know, Mal could have possibly attacked her far sooner.
Yeah,
you know, because she wasn't there as a reminder to Leonardo DiCaprio.
And I think the scene that kind of sums up my frustration with her character is when it's shown her totem that she's creating. Mm-hmm. And then she never uses it. It was like, why did you show her creating her totem if she's never going to use it? And it's never referred to again. That's
kind of how many times did that, see Joseph Gordon let it die?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't see it more than once.
Well, that's another. I mean, I don't think that's the strength of the movie.
It was just shown as an example of a totem because you only saw Leonardo DiCaprio's over and over. So
yeah,
that was the most important one.
Yeah, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt was exposition. It was telling you what a totem is, and then you know.
And then she went and made one, and she was like, hey, look. And he's like, can I touch it? And she's like, no. And then that was it. You never saw it again.
Showing the growth of her character.
I'm willing to bet, though, there's a deleted scene with her totem. I'm willing to bet.
And I'm also going to throw in there, if that wasn't brought up, somebody out there would be like, well, where was her totem? You know, it's like, why didn't she make one? That would happen.
Yeah.
No. Maybe.
Well, I think
that's just attention to detail.
That also
the most important totem was Leonardo DiCaprio.
That was the only important.
That was the only one, right? It didn't. None of the other ones. You could just assume they all have them, right? Yeah. Because wouldn't the other guy, the forger, would have it? The chemist would have it, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't pull theirs out of their pocket and be like, "Got my totem." Yeah, so.
I would at least think the forger would. I don't know about the chemist because
he was in a dream. He should have had one.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying he generally wouldn't be going into dreams all the time if he was the one putting people to sleep, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he's not a professional at going into dreams a lot.
I doubt he knows enough to not go into that dream without one.
Yeah. And
first of all, I think we should mention, though, that this movie, when you go into this movie, it is a given that every person knows about these dreamscape, you know, these abilities. Right? Like, this is a part of the culture. This isn't like an underground thing where it's
it is.
What do you mean?
I thought it was.
Yeah, no, that wasn't like a main. I don't think the dreamscaping thing was supposed to be mainstream.
I think it was.
Why'd they all go into that basement and like chemist's basement with all those?
No, because they were doing something illegal.
Yeah.
They were gonna do Inception that's illegal, whatever. It's like,
no, that's not why they were there.
The eighty year old people. The older people that were going there to wake up, that part where the old guy's like, they're coming here to wake up. Who are you to say otherwise?
Right.
They're all underground. They're all like hiding.
Yeah.
Right, but it's not. It's like, yeah, but you know, we have like underground drug trafficking. That doesn't mean we don't know about it. That's mm-hmm.
But they're not doing anything
like,
illegal.
Yeah, but I think
that's just living in the dream
world. I think
no. It's not a secret in this world. Like, it's not like Leonardo DiCaprio is like, I know this way to do this, and they're like, you're crazy. Like, it's not. You know what I'm saying? It's an
well, the people that
culture.
No, the Inception's not. The Inception was clearly only happened like once or twice.
I was under the impression that it's like, you know, we may know about heroin, but we don't know what happens to a person when they're on heroin. You know what
I'm
saying?
Why not? Yes,
like,
we do.
I don't. I've never
not without experience.
Well, I personally, like, yeah, you don't personally know. You don't
that's
know what happens when you're on fire either, but you've seen the consequences of someone going on fire, right? What I'm saying is that, look, if Cillian Murphy's character was trained in defense against, you know, dream theft, then that means that it's something that everyone knows about in this world. It's
but
not
he's
like
rich, no. And he has the potential to have.
What are you arguing against exactly here? Like, what are you arguing against here? Like, what point are you trying to prove? Like, I'm trying to prove that. It's not one person who discovers something and everyone thinks they're crazy. Like, that's not possible. I'm saying everyone in this culture, everyone in this world knows of these possibilities. Not that it's easy to do or that everyone is able to do it, but it is something that's known in this
culture. Well, you're suggesting that, like, what everybody's doing is, like, illegal.
Like
they're all stealing dreams or thoughts or whatever, and that's not the case.
No, I didn't say they all were because
when you said like what they're doing is illegal.
Inception is.
Mm-hmm. But that
said
was,
it's
like,
not
like,
legal. He said it's not legal.
But yeah, that was again only like two experiences that they were talking about.
Yeah, again, that's left up to our interpretation because the only thing that we know for sure is that it was developed as a military project. But we don't know how much time has passed between when it was first developed for the military and then until now. We know that they stopped using it. Like they said they used it to train soldiers so that they can kill each other without hurting each other. And there are certain people that knew about it. But Ellen Page still, when she was first introduced to the dream, she was still like, oh, how do you do this? Oh, you can do that?
Yeah, but she wasn't surprised, though. It's not like they said, hey, we're going to go into this person's subconscious mm-hmm. and do the thing. She wasn't like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, like, she was well aware. She had already been, you know, taught about it by Michael Caine's character, right?
Yeah,
that would, I would assume, would be like a philosophy class in Paris.
Right, exactly. Like, so she already was aware. That's all I'm mm-hmm. saying is that It's an established fact in this culture that these things are possible. You know, whereas if Hunter came to me and said, Eve, me, Jen, and Justin are going to go into Ben Songer's dreams and steal his thoughts.
It is possible.
I would be like, okay, Hunter.
Okay, it's possible, though.
Okay, yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't believe you. It's not like on CNN they go like, so-and-so went into this person's dream again. Ugh, another dream theft. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you know, that's all I'm saying is that in this movie it is set up as a premise, as a given, that this is something that people know is possible to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say you do it or you want to do it or whatever, it's not a crazy thought. Like, mm-hmm. you know it's possible. I mean,
if
third world countries are like doing this, you know, people in third world countries who look like they can't afford food are going to be put under a dream state so that they can live in an alternate reality. Like, it has to be mainstream.
I think it's more technology mainstream than anything else. If that is true, probably. Because the same thing that happens, like if I went around and said, you know what the iPhone 4 does, I'm sure my mom would be like, well, actually, she probably would know about it now, but before. Like,
yeah, I mean, if 100 years ago you would have said, like, this little keyboard you type on, and then someone in another country will know what you typed. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so there's going to be like the people that just don't know anything about it at all.
No, but I mean, I just feel like this, it's well established that it's a possibility.
Yeah, and
I'm just saying they didn't go beyond to somebody that didn't know about it already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I don't think I think that if that were the case, you know, if they had gone outside the people doing
it. And I think Fisher's character was rich, and that's why he had the money to pay for the fences. Well,
everybody knows rich people.
How did the third world people, how were they able to afford it?
The dream sharing is a different thing, though. I think the training and the theft stuff, mm-hmm. I think that's a whole, like, a higher class of dream sharing
stuff. Yeah, because you think about, like, Bill Gates has access to stuff that we don't even know about at this point or something like that.
Like, and, like, what would I have to protect information-wise? Like, why would I pay someone to train my mind to have those people in them? You know what I'm saying?
That's what I like. I think you can interpret it Eve's way, where you think where the whole population knows about this, or I think you can go Hunter or Jen's way, where it's, okay, select groups of people know about this, and let's say the third world country is that chemist, he knows about it, and he brings people in, and, you know, there's a small pocket of individuals that know about it, but not necessarily the whole country of Morocco, wherever they went, which... I think you can see it both ways. It doesn't really necessarily say, okay, this is exactly how it is. They leave it up to your imagination, ambiguous, and I think they do that throughout most of the movie. But I did want to say, speaking of Morocco, I loved all the different locations that they went to and they shot in, especially the first scene of Tokyo, because I've lived in Tokyo before and it's one of my favorite cities. So seeing them in the helicopter over Tokyo and flying, I was like, yeah.
I think one of my favorite parts, like location-wise, was the snow place. That was pretty freaking cool.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then just like watching people. I was like, is this Modern Warfare 2 or what's going on? Because they're just like freaking like – especially what's his face's character, the forger?
Yeah, Tom Hardy.
Mm-hmm. Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy's character, I mean – that guy was like – he was, I don't know, 007 MacGyver. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was pretty cool.
And Chuck Norris all mixed together. Like,
and that when he
drops down and just, like, turns around and shoots somebody in the face. And you're just like, okay.
That whole snow level was pretty much Christopher Nolan doing his Bond movie, which I like. That's another thing.
Yeah,
that's another thing that I like about the movie is there's so many genres that it mixes with all the different dreams. Because, you know, it is a heist movie where you have this – it's one of those one last job heist movies. I got to do this before I get out. But it takes place in your mind, in the dreams. And then, you know, it's also like an espionage thriller like Mission Impossible or Bond. And then you got the romance and there's a mind bender element to it. And then there's a film noir element to it.
Like, Matrix.
Right.
All of these things are combined into
when
this.
When he loses gravity in the
we didn't even talk about that.
And I love the explanation.
Yeah. No, wait, can I ask a question about that? Because I've been really, really thinking about this, and I want someone to give me the answer.
So
now
you're talking about the Joseph Gordon-Levitt scene when he's in the hallway, right?
Well, in part. That's part of it, right? Yeah. Okay. In the first level, in the van when they're on the streets, Saito gets shot, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then when they're in the van, they sync up again to another dream, to Joseph Gordon-Levitt's dream, right? And they go into the hotel. And then when the van goes over the bridge in the first level, that's when they lose gravity in the second level, right?
Yeah.
And now in that second level, Saito, you see he's bleeding, like he's whatever. Then they go into the third level, which is the ice, the snow level, right? Mm-hmm. And Saito, he is bleeding. Remember, he coughs up blood in that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Why aren't they all floating in the third level like they are in the second level? Because I feel like if Saito is bleeding in the third level, then that means they're still being affected by the previous level. So why aren't they all floating zero gravity in the snow level?
Yes.
Because... like the time is even slower, like so it would. The way I took it is that, like, whereas in the hotel Joseph Gordon-Levitt level, like that's going slow, but like sort of in an instance where like that zero gravity is being affected, it's even less of that. Like if that's really hard to explain. But it's not going as fast, so it's not feeling like, you know,
yeah.
floating.
Yeah, so but saying, but he's still bleeding though. Like,
well, yeah, but he's basically dead in the first one.
Yeah,
and it's because, like, he's even closer to death in the second one.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio said, as you go further and further, you won't feel the pain as much.
Right.
So it gets, you know, less you the farther removed you get from the original level, the less you feel the effects. So I think what Hunter's saying is
there's
the first one, he's basically dead.
Well,
yeah, there's zero gravity in the first one. There's like less than zero gravity on the second one, where it's kind of like less no gravity, but then on the third one it's so diminished that it's just regular gravity.
Well, I think almost to the point where maybe it hasn't caught up to that point yet.
Well, I was thinking that too, but I just felt like he's been bleeding since like the very beginning when they got there, and each level you see that he is still bleeding and dying, and I felt like I did think that too, like maybe it just hasn't caught up yet, but then I was like, but the fact that he's bleeding through all of them doesn't make enough sense then.
And he's also got everyone tied down in the second level too.
The first one, he's basically dead. And then in the second one, like, he's close to death. And then in the third one, I would say that, like, while that's going on, it's not affecting him as much. Like, he was able to at least get
he fired on those and threw the
bomb. Yeah, and he was able to get there on his own, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, he was able to get through those air ducts. But, like, once that started finally catching up. And that's also when that started finally catching up, that's when the avalanche happened. And that's when, you know, that level started to get destroyed as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That when those kicks happened.
Yeah, like I said, that I don't think that one was ever specifically addressed. And the same thing, Eve, I was kind of wondering, in the elevator scene where Joseph Gordon-Levitt has to provide the kick with zero gravity, can somebody explain exactly how he did that? I didn't
know. Yeah,
like it's like pushing it.
He used the explosion's, like, force to push the elevator downwards, and then once the elevator hit the bottom of the shaft, it bounced them basically.
Yeah, because
as far as I could tell, that's what he was.
I felt like that was.
I don't know if it was visually represented.
Yeah, I couldn't understand that from what I was seeing.
With the combination of zero gravity, him going through the top and bottom of the elevator, the amount of times that he had to move those stupid bombs and everything, how strong the bombs were to take out an entire floor, so they would fall through the floor into another room, and then apparently not blow up the top of a elevator. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, in each level, each dreamer had to provide a kick, right? Each level had to have its own kick, so you would wake up from that level. Mm-hmm. So what was the kick that woke up Ellen Page when she was in Leonardo DiCaprio's house?
She jumped off, killed herself.
And
that part doesn't make sense to me.
I don't understand how that doesn't make sense.
The kick is supposed
to
happen in the previous level.
Yeah.
Like, something was supposed to happen to knock her in that previous level.
But
like, you can't just jump off.
She jumped off the building and then hit the floor and the
right,
the
but
and no, guys.
Not her dying.
The impact of her hitting the floor waked her up before she died.
But see, that's also the same thing that happened with Mal and Dom when they killed themselves in Limbo before.
No, I think we established
the exact same thing, and that's what kicked him out.
No, yeah, Eve already said that, Hunter. I think we've already established that when Mal and Cobb were in theirs, they weren't under the heavy sedation, so they could kill themselves to get out of the limbo. But they set up in the beginning of when we first went on the heist that because we're under so much heavy sedation, we can't kill ourselves to get out of it.
No, that was the case before they go to limbo. And those first three levels, if they kill themselves, they would end up in limbo. Or if they were to die, they would end up in limbo. But with limbo, that's a completely different world.
Well, that,
and as they've shown before,
but they visually show what they're saying though is that they visually showed that she used a kick to get herself back.
Mm-hmm.
They visually showed that from limbo that she didn't. She came back to the third level. She didn't wake up right when she fell and died. That's why I'm saying the impact of her hitting the ground was basically her kick. Like, not
but that doesn't happen.
Dying. you know.
That is, the kicks bring them back from the dream on the second, like the next one.
And so actually, like, it doesn't even second, need to be, I'm sorry, I mistook. They actually explained it this way. It doesn't even need to have impact. It just needs to have the feeling of you falling.
Right. So but
her falling wakes her up before she even hits the
ground. But that's what doesn't make sense. She's in limbo. She throws herself off the balcony. That shouldn't wake her up. The kick has to come from the previous level. Like, she would have had to throw herself off something in the previous level.
Yeah.
Understand?
Well, no. That's the whole thing. Is she was with the entire group on the third level. Oh, hang on. Wait, yes. Yeah. She was on the floor. She was on the floor in that building. Yeah, she was on the floor in the building. And then, what's his name? The
Saito?
No, the Forger. He blew up the floor of that entire complex. Listen. That fell down, and then in the second level, she was in the elevator with them. And in the first,
why did they have her throw herself off the balcony?
Because it has to sync up with everything else. You have to have a kick in the next level as well.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think
that wasn't established that you needed kicks and everything, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because
I think they did that just for effect, like to be like, look, she's gonna get out of here now, you know what I'm saying? I think that was like her big exit.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Well, that's
like, I think that's what it was. Mm-hmm. I'm
with Eve on there, because if you're saying that it wasn't the she wasn't killing herself to get out of limbo, you're saying she just fell. You can't kick yourself out of the same level. You can kill yourself to get back to the previous level, but you can't kick yourself. The kick, whenever the kick is shown, it's the previous level up, them kicking whoever's in the dream. Like, you saw that when you very first saw Leonardo DiCaprio, they pushed him over into that tank of water. It was, they're waking him up from the dream. So someone else from the previous level was kicking him out of there. But whenever someone was killed...
Then why did Joseph Gordon-Levitt have to be in the elevator? And why did...
Well, that was his dream, in the elevator.
It was him.
Well, why did he have to be in there with them for the kick? Why couldn't he just knock them down and then blow it up?
I mean, that's another question.
Because that was a second level, that's why. He wasn't in reality, that's why. Where was the
Forger? Wasn't he inside the building?
That's the same thing, like the guy in the van. Like, you know, he drove the van.
I'm saying they were all in there with the kick. They all made sure that they were with the people for the kick. That's what I'm trying.
Well, that's what kind of didn't make sense. Why? I think they were there because they had to be. You know, where else are you going to be? You're setting up the kick. You can't disappear. You know, it's the same thing. The guy driving into the over the bridge into the water.
Yeah, that one makes sense.
He's driving.
But
right,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt doesn't have to be there, and the Forger doesn't have to be in the building. So, but they made themselves be there because I think they have to.
No, I don't think the proximity has anything to do with it. As far as
I think they have to kick both ways.
They did not establish that at all. That you had to kick both ways, not at all.
I think you do. I think that's why. I don't see any other
reason. Watch it again, Jen.
I watched it twice, and I don't see any other reason why she would jump off the building.
Well, I think it's for effect.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that wasn't...
If it was for effect, then I don't see why they made that happen with every other person that was awake in the dream.
I'm leaving now. Get back. I hope you get back. Remember, she was like, I'm out of here.
Well, then why did it matter if she kicked Fisher off the level?
Here's the thing. She wouldn't know that the kick was coming.
Why would she kick Fisher off the level then?
That's what I'm saying. That doesn't make sense either. Like, it didn't set that up.
Because they needed to have the kick both ways, I think. If there is any mistake, it's in the first kick when he doesn't have a kick set up the opposite way.
Well, I think that's the problem too. Like, I don't think it was explained that you could kick yourself in the same level. Mm-hmm.
Clearly said that the kick had to come from the level above. They clearly stated that.
That's not the way dreams work. When you dream, and if you're having a falling dream, like, you always wake up because you have that feeling regardless. So it would make sense that that would bring her into the,
well,
the
Hunter,
level above.
You're going off of
I'm
your
not
own
that,
reality. That's not the movie's reality.
The movie does set that up, though.
But the movie does set that up because, look, they were in the second level, mm-hmm. and they missed the first kick mm-hmm. because they hadn't set up a kick for themselves in that level. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if it was just from the level above, they would have been brought back to that level, period.
No, they had to set up a different way to kick themselves because they missed the first kick. Like the first kick
in that level, exactly.
No, the first
if
kick.
If the kick automatic, if you didn't have a kick in the level in the second level, it doesn't affect you. You don't go back to that falling. The falling feeling doesn't wake you up, or else they would have woken up into the first dream in the original kick. That's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. The way you're explaining it, the way you say it's shown. That first kick would have woken them up no matter if they wanted to or not.
No, because if they miss it in the third level, then they're not going to feel it in the first level. That's what they were talking about. That's why they have the music to let them know when the kick is coming, because you have to do it in the bottom level before the next level. That's why they gave them the music cues to let them know when you have to do it.
Yeah, but my point is that the way you guys are explaining it is that the falling feeling will wake you up no matter what. They were in the second level when they they were awake in the second level when they missed the first kick.
Well, I think you're talking to Hunter right now. I never said that.
No, I'm talking to you guys. You and Eve, you said that you don't need a kick in the level below you.
No. We said you need it in the level above you.
Yeah, you don't need it in the one below you is what you're saying.
We're saying you don't need it in the level you're in.
If that's true, then they would have woken up the first kick from in the second level. If they didn't need a kick in the second level to get to the first level, if they were just doing two levels, right?
Mm-hmm. Then they knew they were doing three.
When the van originally fell, when the van originally fell, they would have woke up and had to find another way to go back to the second level.
No, because they were already too deep in it. They were already in the third level.
Oh, they weren't. They were in the second. Go watch it again.
No, the first time they fall, they couldn't be kicked from the third to the first level.
They weren't in the third. They were in the second
level. Joseph Gordon-Levitt wasn't in the third level. He was in the second level. Mm-hmm. So if you're basing it off there doesn't need to be a kick, he would have been brought in by the first kick.
Yeah,
back to
exactly.
The first level, which didn't happen.
That's my point, is that whatever would have happened, the first kick, at least one person would have woken up.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen.
So they needed to have a kick in the next level in order for them to use the kick in the first level.
And that was the case with...
that's why they had to jump off the building, because they needed in limbo to have a kick to catch the kick in the third level.
No, but see, you're not saying anything against what Eve and I are saying. We're still talking about the same level. No, you guys are talking about different levels. We're talking about
we're gonna
you can't
agree
kick
to
yourself
disagree.
Out of the same
Hunter
level.
Hunter understands what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you never explained how did she kick herself out of the bottom level.
It's got to sync up, is what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
And so it synced up with the explosions on the third level, mm-hmm. with how that floor is removing with her falling.
So it
like
didn't
Leonardo
really...
DiCaprio. DiCaprio didn't come out because he didn't set himself up.
Yeah, so that didn't. So then you're saying it didn't really matter that she jumped off the building.
No, that's not at all, because Leonardo, like I said,
she
Leonardo
would have
DiCaprio
missed the kick if she didn't jump off the building.
Yeah, because Leonardo DiCaprio didn't miss.
That doesn't make any sense.
It makes perfect sense in what they said. If with what they set up, it makes perfect sense.
No, I think the problem is the bottom level was the limbo level, and that was like different rules than the actual dream levels. I think that's where the problem is.
No, I think it synced up perfectly. I think the confusing part is that they show you the original kick. They show you is different rules than the kicks in the multi-level dream. Because
that's a problem. If what you just said is true, then that's a problem. If they're showing you one rule and then they're changing it, then that's a problem.
Yeah. But that's not the case, because with the...
And that means a certain movie is not perfect, because
I never
not
said it was perfect. I said I thought it was perfect.
I have emails.
That's not even a true statement. That's not even what was happened, because in the first ones where they explained the kick, it was only a one-level dream. That makes perfect sense. And then with everything else lining up, that makes perfect sense as well. I don't know what the problem is.
No, the first one was a dream within a dream.
But it brought him back to the next level. He was getting killed, he was getting attacked, and brought back in.
Yeah, so but that was not under the sedation, Hunter. That's a different set. That's a different. That's the whole thing. Was
but those rules don't change.
Yeah, the sedation
didn't change at all.
The sedation changes the rules. That's
no, right.
That's
yeah.
So it does make sense, and it's perfect again. There you go.
All right.
Sedation made it so that it's not even different.
This has been like an hour of. We could go on forever and ever. If this is so circular at this point, so we should probably just move on.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Before I get accused of saying something's perfect again, even though I didn't say it.
I have emails.
Yeah, I said, yeah. I think it is. And that's exactly my quote. Yeah. I think it is.
And you
that's what you said about Star
Trek. For not thinking it was
And that's what you said about Star Trek.
I have public tweets. You said, I can't wait to prove you wrong.
That it's not a good movie.
That it's not perfect. I never said it's not a good movie. You do not have any evidence of the kind that I said.
You said it's not as good. You agreed with Chris, who said that it was not as good as Justin thought.
Not as good as Justin said, and Justin said it was the best movie of the year and best movie ever.
Yeah, and then
I asked you
what movie is better this year, and what did you say?
No, because I think every movie kind of sucked this year.
What did you just say about The Losers? And what did you say about Predators? And what did you say about Kick-Ass? And what did you say about...
I liked Kick-Ass better.
I don't see that it's better.
I love Kick-Ass.
I couldn't even remember its title when I asked you what movie was better.
Well, because I had to think what movie came out this year, whatever, you know.
That's what I'm
Kick-Ass
saying.
Kick-Ass had a jetpack.
And I never...
Not my fault.
I said, I think it was perfect, and then I got persecuted for saying that I think it was perfect.
Excuse me, you did not get persecuted. Matter of fact, it was the opposite. Everybody was like, yeah, perfect, perfect, perfect. And then you all were trashing me, and I think Justin said something about how the movie went over my head because I'm a girl. I think there was something to that that was said. Yeah. And I have emails from you guys and tweets where you go and hashtag over your head, like as if I did not understand the movie, and therefore
after you
that's
said
why
it didn't go
I
over didn't my see. Head, therefore sarcasm applies. And then on top of that, when people say, you know, you're allowed to have your own opinion, but then say it's not as good as Justin thinks it is. So Justin's not allowed to think it's
good. But you're
good.
Going by someone else's tweet, not
yeah,
that you agreed with
that person.
All I did was retweet it. That's all I did was retweet it. That's all I did. Because
yeah.
I agreed with them though.
That's what I'm
saying.
I took it to mean that Chris, like, because Justin has pretty much been tweeting about Inception constantly for the past 4 days now.
And I don't blame him because it's a good movie.
For you, but my point is that Justin, you know, his Twitter perception of this movie was that none better than this movie. Best
Which
movie
is right.
Year, you can't get any better. All right, fine. And Chris was saying, I don't think that the movie is as good as that Justin thinks the movie is.
But he had also said beforehand that he's going to hate it regardless because of what people
see, I didn't see that tweet actually until like right before we started recording. And then I realized like, oh, wait, like he set out to, you know, stir the pot. See, I didn't know that. You know? So basically you guys jumped on me because all I did was retweet something he said. My perception of what he wrote was different. See, now I think Christopher Nolan wanted my perception to be different about what I thought about Chris than what you
Well, then it worked perfectly.
So yeah, so then the situation is perfect.
So he achieved his goal and it is
So perfect. Now that everyone is thoroughly Now that everyone is thoroughly confused, go watch Inception again so you can get even more confused.
Right.
I would give it a 5 out of 5. Justin?
Same.
Eve?
8 out of 10.
Which is a 4 out of 5. Okay, so other than that, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. It's extremely long. If you enjoy our arguments and think we're crazy for even having an argument, then... just give us an email real quick before we go over our contact info. I want to let everyone know that we're going to have a contest and we want everyone to submit topics. We're going to pick two topics over the next couple of weeks to talk about. We'll go ahead and announce the topic and who sent it in, and each person or each one of the people will get a poster, either the Despicable Me or the Predators. Will let you know what you get. So please go ahead and start sending emails with topic suggestions and hopefully you guys will win a little poster. So, Justin, why don't you go ahead and let them know how they can get a hold of us?
You can always visit geeksofdoom.com, where we can be found. You can email us at flicksofdoom@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at twitter.com/flicksofdoom, and that's Flix, F-L-I-X.
Where can we hear some more Hunter Camp?
GothamPodcast.com and Comics of Doom.
And you can also read stories from Hunter Camp, who is at MK2Face on geeksofdoom.com. He likes to write up some stories about different things, and he's done reviews for the site, and he definitely... we all have fun over at Comics of Doom, which is our comics podcast you can go listen to. And I hope everyone has a great rest of your week, and go see Inception at least three or four more times.
Everyone
in this whole entire planet Earth.
All right, let's do this.
You're wrong. See? Did it. I win.
That wasn't even a paper.
Am I doing it this time, or are you gonna... That's what you always say.
Nah.
Face!
Somebody's mad.
Welcome to Flicks of Doom. My name is Justin Vactor, and I'm joined by Jen Abrams.
Hi, guys. I'm a D-bag.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome to Flicks of Doom, episode what, 3? Let me try that again. Around 3?
4.
I know nobody's three. Looking at the outline on the Google Doc here.
I am. Well, I was. I don't know. My browser crashed.
Well, let me bring it up, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not like I should be prepared for a podcast that I host. I mean, come on. What do you expect of me? I'm no Goodman. Hunter Scampi with butter sauce.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.